This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and even an online store with the Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 100, hashtag Leslie Crusher. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Matthew Rushing. Today, we have a special show to celebrate our 100th episode, as we gather Trek FM crew from around the world to discuss 100 things we love about Star Trek. From the States to Australia, from Wales to Japan, Charlene, Drew, Mariel, Daniel, Tom, Max, Lori, and Matt Miller join us for a massive double-length feature. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Matthew. How are you doing this week?
It's been a long road. Ooh, that's a good line. That'll work. Chris, I'm just writing this song about our 100th episode. Okay. Let me play a little bit for you. It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but I finally found it here. What do you think so far?
It's pretty good, but you know, I'm afraid that a lot of fans will say, I hate that theme song, and just turn off the show and not listen to the rest of the
Ready Room. I've been working on this for hours, Chris. I'll get back to the drawing board. We get to the 200th episode, maybe it'll finally be good enough. Oh, well.
Maybe so. But yeah, it's hard to believe this is our 100th Ready Room. And Matthew, I'm glad to have you here with me today to do a very abbreviated news segment before we jump into a monster feature like we've never done before.
Chris, I just have to say, it's a real honor to be on the show, the 100th episode with you and hosting. I always thought of the Ready Room as kind of like the crown jewel of Star Trek podcasting. And so to be a part of its 100th episode like this is... I couldn't even imagine a year ago. So it's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's hard for me to believe too. Two episodes ago, the Ready Room 98 actually marked exactly 2 years since the first episode of the Ready Room aired. And now here we are at episode 100. And this is, you know, for me, it's kind of like... Steve Jobs talked about the iPad versus the iPhone, and they actually were working on the iPad before the iPhone, but they released the iPhone first. And the Ready Room is kind of like that. Hyperchannel was our first show on Trek FM, but the Ready Room is actually the show that I was developing first. And it took, you know, a while before we launched it. And finally, you know, things fell into place. Unfortunately, we had that huge earthquake here in Japan on March 11th of 2011, and as a result of that earthquake, I met Greg, and, you know, Greg and I came on the show together. We did the first episode, and Greg was with us all the way up through, I guess it was show 87, and then he, you know, moved on to do other things, and here we are still going strong, and I have such a great crew. We have so many hosts across all the different shows on the network now. It's hard for me to believe that... this would spawn 12 shows in this huge network that it has. But I have such a great crew. I really appreciate everyone, and everyone can come on the Ready Room and contribute. And it's just so much fun. And so here we are at show 100. It's really hard for me to believe. And of course, I really want to give a huge thank you to all the listeners, because without all of you guys listening, we wouldn't be here for show 100. And we get such great feedback on Twitter, on Facebook, by email, by voicemail. We get so many wonderful comments from all of you guys listening. And it really means a lot to me, and I know to Matthew and to all the hosts on Trek FM, that we are able to sit down and talk about Star Trek every week, and that it means something to all of you guys, and that we can help you make your commutes more enjoyable, you know, help you enjoy Star Trek more, see things that you didn't see before. And of course, you guys share with us things that we didn't see before as well. That's the great thing about the discussions that we end up with through social media as a result of the Ready Room. So a big thank you to everyone listening as well. And we're looking forward to being here with you for a 200th show a couple of years from now.
Sounds good.
So, Matthew, this is going to be a very unusual Ready Room. We're going to have a very short news segment. There's just a couple of timely items that we want to throw out there for you guys. And then we're going to jump into a feature that is not our usual episode discussion, but what we've done is we have assembled as many of the hosts from Trek FM as we could, you know, because we have a lot of time zones to juggle. And we're going to have a group discussion of the 100 things we love about Star Trek. And we're going to get as many of them as we can into the show. I'm sure we're not going to get to 100 because that would take us, what, like 4 or 5 hours probably? It would be. It'd be a monster download. But we're going to hit as many as we can. And joining us in the feature today are Char, Daniel Prue, who everyone heard on the Ready Room last week, Matt Miller, who is editing The Orb, Landru, our TOS editor, Lori from To The Journey, Max from Commentary Trek Stars, Tom from Deck 8, Mariel, our news editor, and of course, Matthew, you're here with me to do the whole show. And unfortunately, Tristan couldn't make it. He had other obligations. Mike Schindler from Commentary Trek Stars couldn't make it. Shervin and Kate from Deck 8 could not make it this week. And Colin, unfortunately, couldn't make it because it would have been 2 to 4 a.m. for him. But Colin did record a message for us, so let's play that for everyone now.
Hi, Chris, it's Colin. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make your 100th show due to the fact that it's 2 a.m. in the morning and we'll probably finish at 4 a.m. by the time you've got through everyone. But I just wanted to say, as someone who's been listening to The Ready Room since episode 5, I can't believe that was 95 episodes ago, and here we are at 100. It's a true testament to the entertainment value and the quality of the production that you've managed to endure to 100 shows. Not many podcasts get to 50, never mind 100. And I think it's a testament to your versatility, your endeavour and your tenacity and belief in the Ready Room and Trek FM and Star Trek itself, that you've managed to keep everyone entertained for 100 episodes. And I am honoured to be part of the Trek FM family, and I am honoured to know you and to have listened to you for all this time, which has gone very, very, very quickly. But, you know, when you get to a certain age, the years just fly by anyway. So I hope that everyone has fun on the Ready Room 100 show. And I just want to say thank you for the entertainment. Thank you for the chances. And thank you for being you and doing what you do. And it means a lot to me and to an awful lot of other people. So take care, have fun, and as I always do when I do voicemails, live long and podcast.
Well, thank you, Colin. I know you're listening right now, so thank you for that message. That means a lot to me, the very kind words. And thank you from my side for everything that you do for Trek FM, because it's an awful lot. I really appreciate it.
It was great to hear from Colin, Chris. And what I love about Colin, too, is the fact that without him, I wouldn't have found Trek FM. I found his show, and his was the first Trek FM show I'd had found because he had just, I think, joined Trek FM at the point where I started listening to podcasts looking for them Star Trek-wise. And so it's great to have Colin be part of the Trek FM family. I can't imagine us without him and just what he brings to the group. And he's just a great guy, and I echo his sentiments for what he said about you. Just a fantastic guy, and for giving us all a chance to be a part of this. And because I wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for you and your support. And it's been fantastic. It's such a great family to be a part of.
Well, thank you. That's great. That path. You came in through Trek News and Views, and you got over here, and now you're on the Ready Room often. And we do the orb together and literary tricks together, and it's been a lot of fun. So I'm glad that worked out too, and that you were able to come to us. And we have many, many loyal listeners, and one listener in particular who, for almost the whole 2 years, I guess, that we've been doing the Ready Room and doing Trek FM, Renee Roberts, who also goes by Maris in Germany. She is one of our biggest fans, and not only one of our biggest fans, but just she's a huge supporter of Star Trek podcasting in general, all the Star Trek podcasts out there. She's a real champion for everything that all of us in the fan community are doing to discuss Star Trek. And she sent us a very special message. It's very creative. So let's play that for you now.
Computer. Record personal message to Dr. Robinson, Music Department, Starfleet Academy, Stardate 20136.9. Dear Dr. Robinson, thanks for the message you sent last month. Sorry I haven't had time to reply sooner, but life's been pretty crazy around here. Since transferring to Deep Space Nine, I've been assigned to the Science Division under Commander Dax. Working with her is great fun. I'm certain you've heard of the recent discovery of the wormhole. I have every hope that I'll be assigned to the first planetary survey mission in the Gamma Quadrant. You mentioned you'd become interested in studying 21st century communications technology. I did a little research for you and came up with a fascinating phenomenon called podcasting. It was something like the old-style radio shows I've heard you speak of, but it was broadcast on what they called the Internet, which I presume was a forerunner of our modern subspace communications network. It seems that, at the start of that century, there was a huge television and film phenomenon called Star Trek that dominated their popular culture and inspired many of these podcasts. I can only assume this was a result of the temporal Cold War. Since they describe our current lives with such pinpoint accuracy, it's a bit unnerving sometimes. Sadly, only a very few of these podcasts have been preserved till now, presumably the ones that everyone believed were the best of all. I've listened to several of them in between shifts. One of my favorites is called The Ready Room. I just listened to their 99th episode, so I hope number 100 has been preserved as well. Chris Jones, the creator and main host, is someone I would really love to have met personally. He and his co-hosts have such wonderful insights into the future that I believe Crewman Daniels must have been on their team. His show was so wonderful that it grew into an entire podcast network called Trek FM. I've listened to most of those shows, and I love all the other hosts, too. If you want to get a feel for what podcasting was like, I can't think of a better place to start. With our current technology, we could revive this ancient tradition and start a podcast that would span the entire galaxy. What do you think it could be about? Music, perhaps? I still miss your music theory classes at the Academy. Well, my shift starts soon, so I better close for now. Have a wonderful day and stay in touch when you can. This is Ensign Roberts signing off. Computer, save message and send.
Chris, it's so great to just kind of hear the creativity of our listeners and just the thankfulness that they have for what we do. You know, what we do, we don't get paid for it. It's just a labor of love. And I'm so glad to have Maris as a listener and a friend now because of Trek FM. I mean, it's brought so many people into my life from around the world that I'm really thankful to have met and to be part of. And that's, I think, one of the beauties of watching Star Trek podcasting do what Star Trek always said would happen in the future, which is to bring people together. And people across racial boundaries, people across ethnic boundaries, and people across religious boundaries, and even, you know, country boundaries. And so it's just fantastic to see that happen. And we really appreciate you, Mares, because like you said, Chris, without the listeners, this doesn't happen. So
most definitely. Yes. Thank you, Mares, for that. That was very creative. I really appreciate the kind words about the show and for you listening all this time. And Matthew, Renee told me that the rain and the birds there at the beginning of that, she actually recorded that herself outside of her house. And I love the fact that this was very much a hands-on, handcrafted piece. So that was really great. So thank you very much, Mares. Okay, well, we have two quick news items. And then most of the show today is going to be the feature because it's a very long discussion that we're going to have about all sorts of things from all across Star Trek, just 100 things we love about Star Trek. But before we get into that, a couple of weeks ago, we told you about Star Trek the Exhibition starting off on a tour for the summer and autumn with three stops on the West Coast. And the first date is already upon us. Matthew, tell everyone where they can go first if they want to see the exhibition.
Well, first, Chris, you're going to want to be in San Diego. The county fair is going to kick off this weekend, June 8th to July 7th. And so if you are wanting to see the Star Trek exhibition, you just head down to San Diego if you're in California. It's going to be fantastic. There's so many great things a part of this exhibition. I'm really jealous that this is not going to be anywhere in Texas because, you know, if it was in Houston or Austin or any of those places, I'd probably actually drive down there and see it. So I think any fan in California, if you can make it, go and see this exhibition.
Yeah, now I remember you were co-hosting with me when we talked about this last time because we did a whole thing about what kind of Star Trek foods they would deep fry.
Exactly, yes.
State Fair, right?
Deep fried gach, I think, was the right one that we were really excited about.
I also remember some of the things that you could see at the exhibition, you know, Kirk's chair, the uniforms, the bridge sets, but one of them was Dr. Crusher sickbay, and you were planning to go into the sick bay, lie down on the bed, and hope that Gates McFadden would come in and take care of you, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I expect that if I walk into Beverly's sick bay, Beverly's going to be there. And so, you know, I'm just going to, you know, fake a migraine or a seizure or something and hope that she comes running out in her lab coat and needs to fix me up.
All right. Well, if you can't make it to San Diego, the next stops on the tour are going to be the Los Angeles County Fair. That's going to be from August 30th to September 29th. And then the final stop will be the Arizona State Fair from October 11th to November 3rd. And if you want more information about this, you can go to the Star Trek The Exhibition website. And they have links there. I think you may even be able, I don't know if you can purchase tickets through there or not, but they'll certainly get you to where you can if there's anything special that you need to do. With these being at state fairs, it may be more of just getting into the fair and then just going in at the door. You know, sometimes Star Trek the Exhibition is having a science center as its home. That's happened in Kentucky and St. Louis and some other places. And in those cases, they had some advanced stuff, I think. But we'll put a link in the show notes and you can go and get all the information about this great event, which I really wish I could attend as well. But I have a feeling it'll never come to Tokyo. So, oh well.
Well, Chris, we might be in the same boat because I'm not sure if it's ever going to come to Dallas or anywhere near me either. So they always seem to forget, I think, about the South, like Texas and, you know, I just don't get this stuff. So if you're listening,
you have a better chance than I do.
You really
though.
Want it. Why, they don't have the Tokyo State Fair?
No.
You guys don't like deep fried foods over there, so.
Yeah, deep fried sushi. That would be great.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of the sushi?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, Chris, the next thing is something that's really, really cool. For any Star Trek fan out there, this is something I think everybody's going to want. Amazon's going to be offering autographed items by Shatner, Nimoy, and Quinto. This is cool.
Yeah, these do look quite nice. They're expensive, but they are autographed by the three actors, and they also come with certificates of authenticity. They are being sold by Celebrity Authentics, and they are only going to be available, though, through Amazon. So it's an Amazon exclusive through the Star Trek Collectibles store. I went and checked them myself last night, and it doesn't say how many they're going to have of each one. I originally got the information from TrekCore, and TrekCore just says that the numbers are severely limited, as few as 10 units for some of the items. So I don't know. The Amazon site right now just says one for everything, but there is more than one available of each item. However, if you want these, I think anyway that they're very likely to sell very quickly. So be sure to keep your eye on the site. And we're going to give you a link to the TrekCore page, because the TrekCore page has images of all the items along with easy links to click through to Amazon so you can track the availability. But Matthew, tell us what items are going to be available.
Well, Chris, one of the ones that I would really want to have is a motion picture movie poster, and it's the movie poster size 27x40. It's going to be signed by Nimoy and Shatner. This is $449.99. It's actually not really that bad of a deal for both of their autographs on this kind of thing, I think. You know, all of these are fantastic memorabilia items, and honestly, what I would expect to pay for something that's of this quality. You know, you could get a TOS tricorder signed by Leonard Nimoy. So, I mean, really, those tricorders are expensive anyway when you get those high-end replicas, and so just getting it signed by Nimoy as well, you know, for $349.99, this is really not a bad deal when it comes down to it.
Right, yeah, because if you go to a con and you get a signature from either Nimoy or Shatner, what is it running? About 100? I think Shatner's $100.
Yeah, Shatner's like 90 to 100.
Yeah, I think Star Trek Las Vegas coming up this year, I believe I saw Shatner's price at $100 for the autograph. So not 100% sure on that. But like you said, yeah, I mean, you're going to be paying for both their signatures half or more of the price of these collectibles in the first place just for that. In addition to those two items, there is an 11x14-inch Spock Legacy photo print, which has Quinto Spock and Nimoy Spock, and they're both signing that. That's going to be $349.99. And this one I think is really cool. You can get the 1978 shooting script for Star Trek the Motion Picture signed by both Nimoy and Shatner for $449.99.
Yeah, that's a great deal too. And what a cool thing to have. I you know, it'd be kind of funny though to actually have this, because would you actually want to open it up? I mean, I don't even know if I'd want to touch it, you know. So you never actually get to read the script. It'd just be sitting there, and you know, because it's got these signatures that you wouldn't want anything to ever happen to them.
Right. You'll be like Sheldon. You'll have it in plastic and no one's allowed to touch it.
That's right. It'll just be in plastic, right, in a shadow box, you know, with a lock on it. You don't want anything happening to this. That's really cool too. You got the End of Darkness QMX phaser replica signed by Quinto. That's $349.99.
I thought about you when I saw that one, because you ordered the Into Darkness Blu-ray that comes with this phaser replica.
I did. So now if I could just get Quinto to sign it, it would be incredible. And then this is the least expensive item on the list here, but it's still very cool. It's an 8x10 Into Darkness Spock poster, and it's signed by Quinto, and it's only $99.99. And so, you know, and none of the new Trek people have done a con yet, so this is really the only way you could, you know, get Quinto's signature, and so unless you just, you know, randomly run into him in L.A. or at one of the movie premieres that he's at.
Which I'm sure he'd love. Shove a pin in his face.
Exactly. Yeah. but I get the feeling, you know, I think that in the end, you know, this group of people is, if they're smart, I think they will take on what Shatner and the rest of us and just embrace the Trek, because no matter how your movie career goes, we will pay you lots and lots of money for many years to come to sign things for us as Trek fans, to talk about Star Trek. So, you know, I think the people that have been in the Prime universe have really learned this is something that we'll keep on giving to you if you keep giving back to it. And it's great to see them doing this. I'm glad that at least Quinto, they were able to talk him into signing these things for fans.
Yeah, so that's true. None of them have been to any con so far. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the Star Trek Las Vegas lineup right now as well, just to see if any of them are listed, and I don't see anything yet. So it'll be interesting to see if, by the time August rolls around, if they are able to hook some of the Abramsverse actors in, you know, at least for one day or something, for some kind of session. This poster is they're the ones that they had them anyway for download through iTunes, I believe. They're the kind of stills of the different actors. And this is the one of Quinto. It would be cool, and it's too bad they didn't manage to do this, if they had gotten Chris Pine and Zoe Saldana, and I guess everyone had them too, didn't they? Simon Pegg, there was a Scotty one, there was a Chekhov
yeah,
one.
Yeah, there was a Sulu one. I mean, yeah. You had Sulu and Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Carol Marcus had one. I mean, so they could have done these for all of those main characters.
Right, yeah, these were all done as a set. And then Keenzer has one because Tristan did it, and so...
Yeah, it would have been fantastic.
If they could have gotten everyone to sign and done it as a set, that would have been perfect.
With the Keenzer one, you know, in the middle where he belongs, the heart of the Enterprise.
Exactly, right in dead center. Okay, well, those are our only news items this week. Just two things that were kind of timely, so we did want to get those out there to everyone. We're going to jump into the feature, but before we do that, Matthew, let's take a moment and tell everyone about our sponsor for this week's show, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, a blog, a portfolio, and with the commerce feature that they added recently, you can even do an online store and have it set up in just a few minutes. Now, I've been using Squarespace for 5 or 6 years. I absolutely love the platform. I use it for my personal work. I use it for Trek FM. I use it for client projects. And one thing I love about it as a designer is that Squarespace really cares about design. And they have these templates that you can use as a starting point for your website or your blog. And then they make it very easy for you to modify that using 100% drag and drop system and what they call Layout Engine. Matthew, can you tell us a little bit about what Layout Engine is?
Sure can, Chris. It's really cool. Layout Engine technology gives you the freedom to create a visually rich page that configures the text, the images, the products, and you know, those content blocks. You simply drag your content exactly where you want it, and then they'll automatically align them in a perfect grid. And if you're like me and you're not somebody who's really web savvy, this is perfect. You know, like you said, the layouts are beautiful, and just being able to put things where I want them and kind of rearrange them by dragging and dropping is fantastic. And one of the things that Squarespace does is it's exceptionally well designed. You know, each template has hundreds of little customizing options for it. You've got over 300 fonts. If you're like me, I'm a font freak. If I'm making something, I really do. I will spend like 45 minutes just picking out the right font because it really sets the tone. Yeah. And so, then what's great about this, Chris, is it's got responsive design. Squarespace website has its own unique mobile design so that your site automatically scales. So if somebody's looking at it, their iPhone, it's going to look one way. If it, you look at it on your iPad, it's going to look another. And if you look on the desktop, you're going to have that full site. But this way, people don't miss the content. It's created specifically for the device they're looking on, which is really important in today's mobile world.
Another thing I wanted to mention this week, because we don't really talk about this feature very often, is the developer platform. Because, you know, some of you may be listening and you may be thinking that, you know, this drag and drop, it's all great for the average person, but I'm a web developer and I like to have absolute 100% control. I like to write my code by hand. I like to write my own custom CSS. I want to be able to, you know, have FTP access where I can upload and download files back and forth as I please with a traditional, you know, file folder structure. Well, you can do that with Squarespace as well. In addition to the drag and drop system that we talk about most of the time, Squarespace actually does have a developer's platform that gives you complete control over the display of your website. It gives you complete control over every line of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. It has Git and SFTP, secure FTP. It also has version control. That comes standard. It has developer tools like LESS pre-processing, JSON templating, you know, script comboing. It gives you Retina-ready responsive image handling, which is really important these days as more and more displays become Retina quality. And a great thing about the Squarespace developer platform is that developer accounts are free. They never expire while in development, and you can take as much time as you want developing the website before you launch it, and you don't pay anything until you're ready to launch the website. And then once you're ready, the pricing starts at $16 per month when you go live. It's very, very affordable. It's a great way for you to take advantage of all the power of Squarespace that we normally talk about while you maintain complete control as the developer. And you're not having to put out money during that development process either. So it's a fantastic option for you if you are a developer and you think Squarespace sounds great, but maybe you are concerned that it might limit you. Trust me, Squarespace will not limit you. You can do absolutely anything you want to with this platform. So Matthew, let's tell everyone how they can try Squarespace for free. You can get a free account, 14-day trial, no credit card required. All they ask you for is your name and an email address, and they use that to set up the site. You can use all the features of Squarespace for 14 days, or of course, you can set up a developer account as well if you'd like to have that complete control. And then, when you get ready to sign up after 14 days, pricing starts at $8 per month standard, $16 for the unlimited package. And if you want to build an online store, you'll want to get the business package for just $24 per month. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off by using offer code TREK6. So just go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6. And when you do this, you'll be getting the web's best CMS, you'll be getting the best hosting, and you'll be getting the best customer service because Squarespace, they are there for you 24/7. And they really are. I've had to talk to them a number of times just with different questions I've had. You know, I want to have some help with this or that. They usually respond to me in a matter of minutes, and they stay with me all the way through until my problem is resolved or my questions have been answered. And you can get it all by just going to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6 to save 10%. And you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring this programming to you every week. Well, for this week's show, we're doing something completely different for our feature. We're not going to do an episode discussion. As this is our 100th show, we have gathered together, not everybody, but a large portion of the Trek FM crew for just a giant chat about 100 things we love about Star Trek. And we have people from all over, literally all over the world today. In fact, I think we just clapped together, and I think that we caused the earth to wobble. Just
the clap heard around the world.
The clap heard around the world. But we have, I believe, someone from every Trek FM show. And of course, we're going to just introduce everyone in the random order of names that we drew for discussion today. To start off, we have two people from To the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey! To the Journey!
All right. Woo! Good. We have Char and Lori. Hello, ladies.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Excellent. We have with us a guest podcast panelist, Daniel Prue, or Drew, do you mind if we call Daniel Lanprue? Is that all right with you?
That's fine. As long as you enunciate the D in Landrew, I'll be okay.
Is that like a you know, labradoodle and a dachshund put together? Lanprue?
Some kind of joint thing, yes.
It's the best of both worlds, really.
Yes. So we have Daniel, who everyone heard on the Ready Room last week. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. I'm excited to be here for my second week in a row.
Excellent. Yeah, we're glad to have you. And then, of course, we have with us from regular on the Ready Room, our TOS editor, Landrew. Lanprue, meet Landrew. Hello, Drew.
Hello, everybody.
All right. This is
Joy
Drew
to you, friends. That's the proper greeting. I'm sorry.
Joy to you, Landrew. And also representing commentary Trek stars, we have Max Eagle. Hey, Max.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here.
Too bad Mike couldn't join you today.
Yeah, but he gave me one item that I'm going to hate when I recite. So, there is that.
Good.
Classic Max.
Which reminds me, we don't have Tristan with us from To the Journey today. Now, Lori and Char, did Tristan give you guys one item?
He didn't. No.
Nothing.
The slacker, well, he's out rafting or something.
He is.
Yeah.
It's like he's got stuff.
You know what happens
do?
On Star Trek when you go rafting? You end up in sick bay with an injured knee or an arm.
Yeah.
So.
And Beverly tries to fix you and you die.
I just hope he's not going to see Dr. Crusher.
Or you're O'Brien. You're O'Brien, and you know your shoulder pops out, and Julian has to pop it back in for him.
Ooh!
I was going to say, you go to sick bay, Beverly tries to fix you, then you come on the bridge, and you look like the Talosians put you back together.
I guess we'll find out Monday when we record tomorrow's To the Journey.
Yeah,
to the Journey.
To the Journey. All right. Coming to us from Deck 8 and staying up way past his bedtime from Wells is Thomas Baddeley. Hey, Tom.
Hello.
Good to have you. First time with us on the Ready Room.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And from sunny Florida, we have our news editor, Mariel. Hello, Mariel.
Hi.
You're hiding down there in Florida, are you?
Oh, I'm not hiding. I'm just, you know, in the best place on earth.
I thought it was the happiest place on earth.
Disney World?
Why do we all think this is funny?
just speaking
just
the
wait,
truth.
Yeah. Just wait till the Zindi attack and it's not so nice anymore.
That's true.
Oh, hurricane too soon. Zindi. Too soon.
Seriously.
You are right, Matt. I mean,
spoilers.
I'm sorry.
I'm
not there yet.
The Lincoln assassination only recently became funny, so.
Yeah, I have a feeling that as a Floridian, Zindi attack is probably not on Mariel's list tonight.
No, not really.
I think she might be conveniently out of town at the time.
That's right. Somehow she knew. Yeah. She must be an agent. All right. And then, of course, Matthew and I are here from Literary Treks and The Orb. And one more person we have joining us from Australia today. Someone, a voice you haven't heard on any of the shows before, but you've heard his work. This is Matt Miller of TrekZone.org, who also has been editing the Orb for everyone. So Matt, you're representing the Orb yourself.
Greetings, mortals. That was my radio voice. How are we all?
Good.
Great.
Hello from Australia. I'm wondering whether we might need subtitles for my accent, you know, since everyone else is American, British.
No.
I think
no,
we'll be okay.
You're good.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
We gotcha.
And now for something completely different. An Australian.
Hello there, mates. How are we? What's going on here? Check another shrimp on the
nice.
There you go. All those bloody things that the tourism ad in the 80s, you know, didn't do for us.
Is it true that Foster's is actually a terrible, terrible Australian beer?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Disappointed.
That's so good to know.
And also, we don't have kangaroos in our backyards.
No? Okay.
No. But you ride them to work, right?
Yeah.
We keep them in the front yard, obviously.
Yeah.
In the driveway.
You got the kangaroo post and, you know, the kangaroo shoe man, everybody. That's common knowledge. We do know a little bit about Australia.
We've actually just got a new form of transport. I believe you guys in America call it an automobile.
Oh. I thought he was going to say dingo.
Horseless carriage, yep.
It's horseless carriage. It'll never catch on, surely.
No.
Never.
It's too bad that... It's too bad that Errand of Mercy wasn't set on some planet that had been colonized by Australians, because then they would have beamed down, they would have had green kangaroos waiting outside.
Actually, have you...
Star Trek was an Australian show.
Well, there has never been an Australian represented on any starship or any space station or anything like that. And I think that's a bit racist.
Aww. No, the problem is that there used to be Australian captains in Starfleet, but the problem was that whenever they encountered a hostile vessel, they were just so laid back about the whole thing. They always got destroyed. So,
well, actually, you guys remember the Tomad incident, right?
Yeah,
that was actually caused by an Australian. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Ever since then, we've only been allowed to be red shirts. And not only that, but non-speaking red shirts.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah, they're a lot cheaper, those non-speaking red shirts.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to try to get through 100 items here. And we'll discuss some of them. Some of them we'll probably just throw out there and move on to the next one, because we'll never get through 100 things discussing them all. But so we drew names out of a hat, and I literally did this. I used my houndstooth Alabama Crimson Tide baseball cap. I put your names on pieces of paper. And the first name to come out of the hat was Char. So, Char, please tell us, what is the first item on your list today?
Okay, I think I've got a good one, guys. Effing with time is fun. Because Apple episodes are some of the most entertaining adventures we've had in Trek. And Max is giving me the strangest gesture right now. I'm not sure what that means.
Did you not listen to the podcast that we did with Colin?
Sorry, Max. Yeah, I forgot about those. I think effing with time is kind of fun. We've had some great stuff come out of it. Some great adventures. We've had,
you know, who's
whale probes.
The master of effing with time, of course, is Anorax. Because no one effed with time more than Anorax did.
That's absolutely true.
That is true.
Dumbass.
Yeah, although Kirk and Janeway definitely had their share and stressed out the time cops.
I don't know, but nobody presses the big red reset button like Janeway. So, I mean, she rams her ship into the whole time ship.
Because she saw a little red button on the side
of
the ship.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, I gotta hit that button.
Hit this button and now time resets.
Tuvok is like, Captain, I have identified the location of the reset button. Tom, set a course for that button.
Set a course for that Babylon 5 state created ship.
Yes.
We're not trying to copy other series. I'll hit it with my bun if I have to. That's why she had the bun in the early seasons, is that she needed to just whip her head back and there goes the button.
All right, so effing with time. That's an excellent one. Daniel, you're next up on the list.
Oh, good. Okay. I actually thought that the opening monologue, right, the space, the final frontier, is a fantastic part of Trek lore that has kind of transcended it and become part of, like, the cultural, you know, it's very iconic. Everybody knows it. And that whole speech from William Shatner delivering it in the original series, even up to Captain Archer towards the end of that episode that shouldn't be mentioned, it's just a beautiful speech, and it kind of, like, it encapsulates what Star Trek is for me.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
And can I, and before we move on, I don't know if anybody else had anything else to say, but Matt from Australia, you...
Yes, mate. Yes, hello.
You were just kind of lamenting the fact that you guys are kind of underrepresented in Star Trek.
Yes.
I want to give you the opportunity right now to say the opening monologue in the representation of all of Australians, so everybody can hear it.
And do
I
it.
Think you should go ahead and do it.
Do it.
What about
do
an Aussie William Shatner version then?
Ooh, okay.
Cool,
I'm
yes.
ready for it.
Awesome.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. It's a 5-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, oh my, and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man, no one has gone before.
Alien!
Yay! Nice job!
Thank you.
Alien
Thank you.
Women all over the galaxy are lining up to be with that guy now.
Well, and what I don't understand...
Not just women.
Not just women.
That just happened.
Oh my.
That was excellent.
Yes. Yes. How am I still single? I don't know.
Well, Matt, you are next on the list. So now that you've given us your Australian William Shatner...
I was actually riding the kangaroo. That's why it was a bit up and down there.
What is first up on your list today?
Look, the top of my list would have to be the vision of hope for the future in pretty much every episode except for Deep Space Nine. But having said that, I didn't really enjoy the uber idealistic utopian future. I was drawn into Deep Space Nine when I saw that. I think I joined in about season 4 because my parents thought it was always a little bit too scary. Little did they know that I was watching from behind the half wall we had in my house growing up as a child. We used to watch it when I was on TV here in Australia. But yeah, Deep Space Nine came along and gave this gritty interpretation of Jean's idealistic future, and I think it was the best. So I sort of changed a little bit there and included 2 of my dot points. But Deep Space Nine, I think, is why I love Star Trek and the future that Australians might be represented on a starship sometime in the future. That'd be nice. And I have red hair, so you know, having redheads run around the ship too is always nice.
This is a man indeed. After my own heart.
Represent!
And also right. Dax. I'll just put in a second one there, Dax.
Hey, wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
He's just stealing people's stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now I have nothing to talk about. Damn it.
Sorry.
Now.
All right.
Can you really
Landry,
get 15 to 20
Here's your chance
points?
To steal something back. You're next up on the
I'm going to steal something back. I'm glad nobody said it. Even when I was young, I always liked these ship designs. Even when I was a big Star Wars fan, I was like, Star Trek, stupid. That's me as a little kid.
You nerd.
I always loved ship designs. I had all the micro machines and the my dad had an Enterprise E toy, you know, that made the sounds. And I always admired the design work going into all the ships and how the designs are all usually, except for Defiant, logical. There's like windows and escape pods and each point is thought out. Like one of my prized things is this printout that I have. I'll turn the thing. You know, John Eaves signed this for me. It's the design of the Enterprise E, the original design. And it's just really cool to have, you know, that people thought about the design and making it all make sense. And they're just usually very pretty ships.
What's your Defiant. What's your favorite ship, Landrew, since you picked ship design?
Oh. It's really hard. It's like picking children. Like, you know, I'll go back and forth. There's a classic, you know, TOS Enterprise design. I mean, just the fact that it doesn't shoot fire out of the obvious rockets on the side is a testament to the idea of them trying to get away from the cheesy sci-fi that was elsewhere on TV, and having, you know, the impulse engines on the saucer section. You know, there's a lot of logic to it that you might miss just because it's big, you know, big plastic ship. I really like the E, though. I think that it's it. I mean, they never really got it built all the way like this design here. There's several things. Each movie added a little bit more to make it. But I really like the sleek kind of sports car look to it.
Now, you said a plastic ship. Now, I'm pretty sure the ship that Picard's flying around in is not actually made of plastic, right?
Right. Oh,
it might melt
really?
When they get too close to a star.
Unless it was designed by an Australian.
Maybe that's why they couldn't get to space. Why don't we just make it out of plastic, huh?
The ship keeps melting when we pass through the atmosphere.
Why don't we build them in space? That's a good idea.
No, let's build them in Iowa.
That way they can go underwater. Right. Water.
Right.
Well, hey, the Zindi built their weapon underwater. They
exactly.
Knew how to hide stuff.
Hello.
That's true.
That's right. Okay, well, that's a good one. The Enterprise Z, I love that ship as well. Lori, you are up next.
Well, I chose that they made science super cool. I really like that. There's a lot of technobabble and craziness that doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, so many people have been inspired to become scientists and other such people. You know, I thought that was really cool. And I'm really late coming into this. And all the things I've read about people, wow, you inspired me to go to NASA and work there. I just think that's amazing. A TV show could inspire people to change their lives. That's cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a great
idea.
Yeah. I had that on my list too.
Me too, yeah.
So I mean, Star Trek is responsible for, you have to say responsible for a large percentage of the technology that we have today. Everything from, you know, iPads.
I have that on my list too.
They're even, you know, researching how to build engines powered by antimatter. Who knows if they'll ever get there, but that comes from Star Trek as well.
It's incredible that something in the 60s, just people trying to tell, you know, an anthology show in science fiction, you know, still we're looking toward trying to build this kind of technology that they have or that they didn't have. And they were just making it up, and it's just like, antimatter, that could work. Or an ion engine, that's a good idea, too. It's like, what?
I don't know if everybody here on the podcast is familiar with the famous astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But we can kind of connect Lori's and Landrew's points here, where he actually, I just watched a talk with him on YouTube the other day where he was talking about the design of the Enterprise and how that show, you know, the show Star Trek and the Enterprise kind of led him to do what he does. He's, you know, the director of the New York City Planetarium. And it's really, it's just amazing. I agree with both of you. Those are both great picks.
And just wait until the 2030s when all of our houses have gigantic round doors that roll sideways whenever we went from inside. Thanks to Cardassian
architecture. I'm waiting for that.
It's
like the best of two universes, Deep Space Nine and The Hobbit.
And Sequest.
Chris, you know why I said that.
I know, I know. I've got the clip ready.
I'm going on an adventure!
All right. Max, you are next up on deck.
Okay, I've got a lot of serious ones, but I'm going to do a silly one. Forgiving weirdos, a topic to talk about in their high school cafeterias. That's probably my favorite thing about Star Trek.
Absolutely.
It pretty much defined my high school experience, so there's that.
It was junior high and high school for me.
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, yeah. Tom, you are up next.
Okay, the first thing on my list would be that Star Trek has helped inventors invent such great devices nowadays, like the mobile phone, tablet computer, even laptops.
Yeah.
Without Star Trek, we might not even have a laptop.
Yeah. The horror. Gives us something to aspire to.
There's the Tricorder X Prize that nobody's claimed yet. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Because I have the prototype in my backpack.
But they will, because they're getting close on that type of technology. I mean, maybe not looking like the Star Trek one, but in functionality, they're, some of those features are already around, and you have to think that in another decade, they probably will be. I'll add to that, Tom. Thankfully, not only did it inspire inventors to create these things in real life, but it also pushed them to go beyond that, because otherwise our iPads would only hold one document and we would have to have a stack of them.
This is true. And we'd have whole stacks of them instead of one.
I'm still disappointed that I can have only one Kindle. And that I don't have a Kindle for each one of my books.
I see. You want a stack
of Kindles.
Well, I
guess nobody's stopping you.
That's true. I have said that you know, if you really like collecting books, just collect Kindles and just have a shelf of Kindles.
Just all keep them all charged.
That's quite the expensive shelf.
Yeah.
It's $100 book and it sucked.
Plus, I have to keep it charged in case I want to read it again sometime.
Then you throw away the Kindle if you don't like the book. Or...
Oh, wow.
Reminded of a Simpsons episode, I think it was, where I think it was Willy. He was just putting down Kindles underneath the birdcage because the newspaper was no longer in existence. Dozens and dozens of Kindles. This is super expensive.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure it was Frederick Tatum.
Oh, was it? Oh, it was.
Yeah.
There you
go.
Okay, next up, Mariel. What's first on your list?
Okay, I gotta find one that hasn't been taken yet. Bones is metaphors. I'm pretty sure I learned what metaphors were from that, not school.
Good one.
True.
And what is your favorite, Mariel?
Oh, gosh. Put me on the spot, why don't you? I really like the one in the 2009 movie about not keeping your prize stallion in the stable. I like that one.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
but he
good.
Must be broken.
So, Matthew, you are next up.
Well, I had some things that I was going to say.
Sorry.
But then this Matt from the alternate universe, the Mirror Universe, stole all mine.
Sorry,
Mirror Matt. Space Nine.
That's your new name, Mirror Matt.
Yeah,
Mirror
then
Matt.
He
Mirror
said Max. The Daxes. And then, of course, Drew brought up Starship Design, which mine's the Enterprise A. Mariel already stole Dr. McCoy, so damn all of you.
Hey, all of mine have already gotten stolen, too. So
and so, yeah, you know. And then, of course, obviously... But I, you know what? I'm going to go with I'm really thankful. I love The Undiscovered Country as a film. I thought it was the perfect way to wrap up the careers of the original cast and also to send them off in such a classy way. I mean, they'd save the universe one more time and actually made friends with their greatest enemies in the end. And it's just such a fantastic movie. I mean, there's so many great lines. The whole cast gets something to do as well. And I love that's my favorite Star Trek film still. And it's the one I've probably seen the most amount of times. And I just really love that movie. You know, when Kirk yells fire and you can just, yeah, you're just waiting for that ship to blow up. Plus you have, you know, Chang, Christopher Plummer spouting, you know, Shakespeare, and it doesn't get much better for me. So
I just watched that film last week, and at the end scene when Uhura says, "We've been called back to space dock," that's a really emotional moment. I think, like, everybody on the bridge is like, I don't want to go back. Like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't tear up necessarily. I'm not going to say I did or didn't, but you know, it was a
just
moment.
Just own it, bro. Just own it. You know,
it's a powerful moment. It's just an amazing movie overall.
Yeah, I remember watching that in the theater and the just the audience reaction to that. Because I mean, no one wanted the crew to go.
I remember how everybody laughed so hard when Spock said, "If I were human, I believe the appropriate response would be go to hell."
Yes.
It's a great line.
It is.
Okay, well, now it comes to me. I'm going to let you guys guess what is my first pick.
Ooh, a certain ensign. Barrel rolls.
The barrel rolls. No.
Wait.
No, it's not.
Andorian fight scenes.
No.
The letter Q, though. The letter. Just the letter.
Read my Twitter feed. It's Ensign Leffler.
Oh, that makes sense. God, yes.
Yeah.
Obvious.
I can see that.
Yeah.
It's a good
no
choice.
No explanation necessary?
Yeah, I mean, so what if she was only in two episodes? She's still one of the most memorable characters in Star Trek. What can we say? All right.
Speaking of spin-offs, she should have gotten a spin-off.
She should have. I think, David E. Kelly, Leffler's Laws. Come on.
Mm. Well, there's 100 episodes right there, isn't there? An episode of Rule?
Wouldn't it? You could team it up with that remake of Bosom Buddies, you know? Star Trek, Leffler's Laws, the sitcom, and then Bosom Buddies, the remake. You know, I mean, this is golden.
Come on, the CW, get on this.
Yeah.
Would Wesley Crusher dress up as a woman in that show?
Oh, we could only hope. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have this really, really cool Technicolor dress.
Yes.
And a beard.
He'd play a character named Leslie.
Can he grow a beard?
Leslie Crusher. That's awesome.
That's now I'm great. Aroused.
My...
We got a winner.
So,
and no one can
figure
out Wesley Crusher, Leslie Crusher. No one can make the connection.
Well, and then it brings into question for the 7 years of Next Gen whether we were actually calling his name wrong, whether he always was Leslie Crusher and he was just born a man, a boy. Questioning
powerful
your weight and sexuality. This is great for the ready room.
Let's hit him up on Twitter and see what he thinks. See if we could get him on board with this.
He's not going to like that.
Maybe if he gets to wear LA Kings apparel. Like an LA Kings dress or something, or a baby doll tee?
Hashtag Leslie Crusher.
A baby doll tee. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on. Char, we're back around to you.
Okay. Death is never a certainty. Because even
especially
if your favorite
if
character
Harry
dies...
Kim.
That's right.
Poor
there
Harry.
There is always a chance that he or she will come back because there is always a way.
There is.
Especially if Janeway's got a bun.
Unless you're Kirk and William Shatner and you're dead.
Oh, but even Shatner resurrected Kirk in novels, so there's always hope.
That's true. That's a good point. But, you know, couldn't make it happen in the movies. So.
And in Priceline.
That's right!
Okay, Daniel, what's next on your list?
Okay, so I am a Next Generation guy. That's where I first started. So the low hum of the engines that really started in The Next Generation and went on through all the subsequent series, I love that. I love that you can hear that, hey, you're at warp right now. Like, I think that's such an environment kind of, like, it's just wonderful. I absolutely adore it. And I love hearing, it doesn't matter if you're on Deep Space Nine, if you're on Voyager, you know, NX-01 or Enterprise D, you always hear the fact that you are on a starship. And I think that's great.
Now, do you have a little, like, a white noise machine in your house that just plays this low engine hum all the time?
No, actually, there is a YouTube video which plays it for 24 hours that I keep on repeat.
Oh my god.
I've actually had to leave my computer running
just so I have a real low engine hum around the house. I just can't. And even at work, working in Australian TV, we always have the big servers running and all the rest of it. It's unnatural now for me not to have a low hum
exactly.
wherever I go.
You can't fall asleep without it, right? That's how it is.
I think for the rest of us, ThinkGeek needs to actually build just a little small desktop box that plays.
That would be brutal.
I pitched this to them.
Oh, did
I pitched this to them. I pitched them a warp core lamp that would like do the pulsing LED.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
But also would make the thrumming engine sound.
That's a
and then
great
you could
idea.
Like go to warp, push a button to go to warp, and it goes whoop, 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 even
that
faster.
Would be so awesome.
The way you're describing this sounds like a completely different toy. I'm just going to say.
Star Trek fans' favorite toy.
Warp core.
What I pitched to ThinkGeek, Landru, was the like 110-inch HD television that looks like the view screen in Ops on Deep Space Nine.
Nice. Ooh.
That's what I want.
Round, oval, for some reason.
Yeah. I'd rather have that than the warp core, because that seems dangerous. Those things are very dangerous.
Would you have to throw it out the window if anything went wrong?
Like, yes.
Get out of here.
But
you have to throw it into the
but
sun.
But warp cores make great gin, so you know you end up with
you wouldn't get rid of
Argyle's
it.
Gin, and so, yeah, give me a warp core.
Okay, I think we are back around to Mirror Matt. What's next on your list?
Well, look, after 726 episodes, the whole series really has just become a rich tapestry and an adventure. And I've just restarted watching Next Gen on Blu-ray. And you forget when you come around to watching it again, because you've got nothing else to do with your life but watch the whole series and then watch it again. And then swip over to another sci-fi series. But you forget about all the intricacies of the plots and all the little things that right. happen, like Troy's accent in season one. like a beardless... the Picard maneuver.
Her hair in the pilot.
Yes. The scant.
Oh, such great hair.
Yeah. Whatever scant. Happened to the scant?
Right.
Speaking
right,
of taking things from my list,
sorry.
One of the best. Right.
It was on mine too.
This is why I can't have nice things. This
jokes.
Is why I can't be on podcasts.
Right. No, Landry, you already gave your list away. That's why you're wearing a scant. We can see it right here on the screen.
Was it that obvious?
Yeah.
In fact, I think Pulaski pulled it off the best.
Oh, God.
Oh, thank God she was wearing pants.
See, I reckon if she had not had the pants, it would have been even better.
Oh, no.
The best thing about the TNG remastered Blu-rays for season one is that because of the clarity of the image, you can see more people in the background, like in the engine room, wearing scants.
Yep.
Yay. You never notice how many scants there are.
Aren't we glad that Riker never wore a scant so that when he put his leg up on something, he leaned in?
The people on the view screen would get a show. You normally have to pay for this.
You see this gigantic Ferengi face in The Last Outpost, and he's like averting his eyes, he's looking away.
Humor,
like,
so
Damon,
ugly.
What's wrong? Yeah. I can't look at you, humor.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
now
the
I know why they
of humans.
Now I know why they call him number one.
It's not that you're ugly. It's your
so
first
hairy.
Officer. Ask him to put his leg down, please.
And then basic
Data's
instinct,
used to it at this point.
Basic Instinct could have done a homage
Data.
To Star Trek. Then.
Poor Data. Oh.
Aren't we lucky that Riker was not a Scottish character that wore a kilt all the time?
Yes!
That'd be great.
Yes, so much. So lucky.
Okay, Drew. Landru, it's your turn.
Oh, cool. I'm glad that nobody took it. I like the trifecta, trinity, whatever you want to call it, of Kirk, Spock, McCoy.
Mm.
And the, you know, Kirk representing... Id, superego, whatever. All of those, the psychology stuff, I really like, you know, Kirk being a conflicted person and having one person to represent his passion and one person to represent his logic and duty. And when he has to ask them for help, it's always interesting to get them together and to make a whole person.
definitely. And you know, people who were the majority of the fan base hates Star Trek V, but if you like the Kirk Spock McCoy trifecta, Star Trek V is good for that because it's the only
That's
movie
why
really where
I
they're all
can't
together.
Say that I hate it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, just really
exactly.
looking at it, it's got some of the best moments between the three of them.
Well, and it's funny that so many fans jump on Shatner and saying that that film is just his ego stroking. But you can see that he has a love for all of the characters in Star Trek in that film because he's trying to give them all something to do, even if we don't always love what they do. And the fact that he really gave, you know, DeForest Kelly some of his best acting moments in the series in that film, as well as Spock, too. I mean, you can tell that he has a great love for the characters and the people he worked with. And I take that as just an offense to say that, you know, this is just ego stroking, because he really was trying to give the crew their greatest adventure. It just didn't work out the way he wanted it to. That trifecta of those three really comes through in that film. And I think it really carried over too into the next film because those three really work together like a well-oiled machine in Undiscovered Country. And it's what got me into Star Trek was watching these three guys being best friends and trying to grapple with everything that the universe could throw at them.
Amen, and, sister.
Yeah. You got to have a community to go through life through, and Star Trek showed that you know, you need to have a family to go through life through, and it might not be the one you're born with, but you know, Ray Roddenberry was doing found families way before Joss Whedon ever came along. So,
well, let's move on to Lori. What's the next on your list, Lori?
I'm going to go with the cultural impact that Star Trek has had. Like, you can say beam me up to anybody and they know what that means. I think that's cool.
You can Anything even say to Siri.
Yeah, you can. She's totally, even though she says she's never watched it, which lets me down every time.
She's
I've
lying.
Asked her several times.
She was on the bridge of the J.J. Abrams Enterprise, obviously. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think, you know, my Siri is a man and he says he's never watched Star Trek either. So they're both lying.
They are lying.
I've just got this image of you, Laurie, sitting up your iPhone in a dock facing the TV while watching Star Trek and making it watch.
Watch it.
Watch it.
And you got the little eyelids held open. You will like this.
I am not recharging you until you watch this episode.
In fact, that's probably...
Don't try to go to sleep.
In fact,
don't even try.
Sitting on the edge of forever, you like it.
What happens when Kirk makes the computers explode? Wouldn't that kill the phone?
That's why Siri doesn't like Star Trek. Siri's afraid she may be next.
Does not compute.
I really don't want Kirk sweet-talking my iPhone, you know, like...
Ew.
You'd have to get a new screen protector. Sorry.
Ew.
Yeah. Oh, man. Moment is gone.
Thanks.
Moment is ruined.
Thanks for that.
Moving on.
All right, Max, you're up next.
Okay, I'm out of silly ones, so I've got for representing art as transformative rather than just reactionary or reflective of society. Star Trek tried to be an instrument in changing society, which I think is an important thing, and it's a fundamental difference between what some people do with their art versus what others do.
Totally.
That's definitely cool.
That was one of mine, and too, essentially. You stated it much more eloquently.
Yes, yeah. You did. You did a good job.
That was deep.
Good choice. Okay, Tom, you're up next.
I don't think this one's been said yet, but as there's no current sort of Trek series on TV at the moment... I feel like it's being kept alive by fan-made content. So, like, if it's, like, mm-hmm. Renegades that's being kick-started or any of the other projects that are going, just to keep it alive.
That's true. I mean, you look at, like, you know, Star Wars fan films, and it's, you know, guys in a forest with, you know, rotoscoped lightsabers. But you look at the Star Trek fan films, we have two or three completely different series that have full recreations of at least the bridge, if not the entire filming set, mm-hmm. from the original series, with replica lighting and the original actors reprising roles. And it is incredible the amount of work that fans are putting and that CBS and Paramount are letting them put into this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's good that the studios are tolerant of that as well, because, you know, a lot of you may remember in the 90s, especially the mid-90s, when Paramount basically shut down Star Trek fan websites when they started the Continuum with MSN. And they were like really locking everything down when they had TNG and DS9 and Voyager all going. And today, I love the fact that they are being tolerant and they're seeing that the fans are keeping this whole franchise alive and moving forward.
We used to have a community meeting every Friday night, I think it was, in Perth, in Australia. It was called the Neutral Zone. And they ended up taking over two lecture halls at a university and were charging $2 admission. And what they were doing was actually flying over the VHS off-air recordings of Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and they were showing them 6 months ahead of the network that was showing it here, Channel 9. I think it ran for about 3 years. You had memberships, and it was essentially a Star Trek convention every Friday night. And I remember we used to go to it, and then Paramount discovered it and shut it down, mainly because they were making a profit and bootlegging episodes. Yeah. But it was basically it was the predecessor for all those illegal ways of doing things these days.
I actually kind of feel like this is probably one of the most important points that we can make, because it's the love of the fans that really keeps the franchise alive. It's the love of the fans that keeps us doing right now what we're doing. And, you know, no matter what you say, it's this franchise that brings us all together. And you really can't overstate that. No other franchise has fans like Star Trek has fans. It's really amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's
also about the fans that are just making the series because they want to make it, like Hidden Frontier and of Gods and Men and all those Intrepid in the UK, Hidden Frontier, you know, all those, and even to a certain extent, my website, people here in Australia, my friends have said, well, can't you start putting ads on the site and all the rest of it and start making a bit of money off it? And it's like, that's not the aim, to make money off it. It's because we love doing what we're doing, that we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And it'd be great if the studio said, yeah, well, you know, and actually gave a real position, because that's been a big thing in fan producing circles, the producers and all that I've spoken to, there's no direction from Paramount. And I mean, like they did in the 90s, they could turn around and shut absolutely everything down. But for them to actually recognize that the fans are out there continuing to spread the word of Star Trek, then the sooner they did that, the better, I reckon.
Yeah.
Tom, I think it's a good point just because, honestly, what we do with podcasting is helps keep it alive too, I think. Not that we're special, but just the fact that, you know, there's so many different podcasts. I mean, you know, 2 years ago when I started looking for Star Trek podcasts, there were very few, and it's exploded in the last few years. And I think it's really cool. It shows the resurgence of Star Trek because of the new films and just everything that's happening in Star Trek, and it's taking hold again. And fan films have been a part of that. Podcasting has been a part of that. JJ Trek's been a part of that. So we really should be thankful that that's happening, or else we wouldn't be getting cool things like, you know, The Next Generation on Blu-ray, Enterprise on Blu-ray, hopefully Deep Space Nine and Voyager on Blu-ray. All these things have come, or TOS on Blu-ray. I mean, all these things are coming because fans have kept it alive, and we need to keep making more fans or it dies. And so our passion and what we share for our friends and our family and those around the world that we hope listen to our shows, that comes through because we feel like Star Trek has something to say.
This started in the 60s. I mean, the whole fan bringing it back for the second season and the third season. I mean, if it was just a one season thing and fans had not gotten involved at that point, we would not be talking about it today. I would not know you people. I would not be talking to you people, because that show the first season was great, but I think it would just be one of those things, like, wouldn't it have been nice if we had had more of that? But, well, we don't. It's just one of those shows from the 60s. You can watch it on VHS. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mariel, what's next on your list?
I have something from the new movie, Into Darkness. I think...
Chris, close your ears. Close your ears.
No spoilers. Oh, no spoilers.
Earmuffs.
Seriously, okay, like, that's why I said that. Can I not say it?
I'm going to have to edit this anyway, so I'm going to have to hear
I'm
it.
I'm sorry.
Just remember, I haven't seen the movie.
That's why I said that. I forgot. I'm sorry. I won't do that one. I won't do that one.
Okay.
I'll do something serious. I like how it addresses social issues, especially, you know, TOS with, you know, including people of color, women, the first interracial kiss on television. I mean, some of it probably wasn't perfect, but when you first start changing things, it's not perfect. At least they tried. And I applaud Star Trek for that.
Mm. Definitely. That's what, you know, had drawn me to Star Trek primarily. I mean, it wasn't necessarily what drew me to Star Trek when I was a kid, when I was 5 years old watching TOS reruns in my great-grandmother's living room. But as an adult in through university, that's, you know, social commentary for me is why I love science fiction in general, and of course why I love Star Trek as well. So okay, so let's take just a pause here. I just got a subspace transmission. It turns out that Starfleet has dispatched Matt Miller to meet with the Tholians, and you know, when you're late meeting with the Tholians, they get really, really pissed. So yep. Matt's going to have to leave us here. So, Matt, I wanted to give you a chance to sign off.
Oh, cool. Thank you, Chris. I was, yes. Well, and also my senses have detected a Borg cube between me and the Tholians. So that'll be interesting.
Oh, gosh. You need to trick the Borg cube into flying in the middle of the Tholian ships. Then they can do a web around it, and then you can escape.
Ah, nice. Well, I was going to say that I've actually taken over the USS Incursion, so I have the Incursion class cloaking device. So I'll just create myself as a sphere, and I'll be able to pass on, mosey on by, you know, just casually going, "Hey, how you doing? Sup?" That's what you do. You open hailing frequencies, and you just say to the Borg, "Sup." And
why
it works.
Don't we add this to the list real quick? Let's add this to the list. Convoluted escape plans.
Yes. With PowerPoint presentations.
Yes. Beam on over to the conference. Well, if you're Captain Picard, you'll get him to beam over to the conference room. You'll set up a PowerPoint presentation. You'll show it to everybody. And then they'll go, okay, we'll let you go. You're boring us. I don't mean that. Perfect. I love Next Gen. But yes, thank you for having me, and thank you for inviting me along, and I look forward to next week's Orb. I learned a lot about Matt Rushing, pretty much in the first one that I edited, which was all about Ezra in a cocktail dress. So as soon as I discovered that, I knew I'd discovered a community here at Trek FM that I'll enjoy hanging out with, and hopefully they'll enjoy hanging out with me.
Absolutely. Well, tell everyone real quick where they can find you online.
Online, I'm at trekzone.org, and that's been going. I'm actually celebrating the 10th birthday next month, July 10, 10 years online, and I'm likening it to a golf analogy where I don't have a lot to show for the front 9 years, but the back 9 years will be pretty good. I'm actually putting together a tribute to Star Trek for that 10th birthday, and got a few special guests coming on the show, so look out for that one. But I'll give Chris more details later on.
Excellent. Awesome. Yeah, and thanks for editing the Orb for us and for joining us today.
Not a problem. Thanks very much, guys.
All right, go meet those Tholians.
Good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so Matthew, we are back around to you. What's next on your list?
Oh, geez. Well, there's just so many things that have already been taking off my list. I'm just sad that Mere Matt had to leave because he would have learned some more about me here with this one. Beverly Crusher is on his list. I don't know why people like to hate her so much. I really liked her as a character.
It's fine.
I was always
really hate her.
She's great.
I know. I was just really disappointed that they never went there with her and Captain Picard. I thought that would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
I think that it would have been more interesting, too, if they had shown her be able to be more of a mother and less of a wonderkin for, you know, her son and more of like a great mother relationship. And so, but I liked her as a character, and I thought that there was so much you could do with her. And I liked that she had a close relationship with Picard, and she had the opportunity to be kind of a bones to him, but less abrasive. And they never took advantage of that. And, and then of course I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just that she's a redhead, but I think Gates McFadden is beautiful. And so I've always loved Dr. Crusher.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Drew. I appreciate that.
I'm on your side.
That's thanks, obviously bro. Agreement like redheads. Right there. Yep.
There you go.
All right. So back to me. Okay. My second item is temporal causality loops. Because
yeah.
Max is so pissed. Wow.
Was that on your list, Max?
No. No, it wasn't.
No, he hates them.
Absolutely not.
You hate time travel, don't you, Max?
No, I love time travel. I just like it when it's even slightly sensible and logical.
Time travel is never logical.
It can actually very easily be logical. It's just people always make mistakes.
Oh, okay.
Now, for me, so Cause and Effect is one of my favorite episodes, and I've ever since I was a kid, I've kind of been fascinated with time and the idea that time, obviously to our brains, there is linear time, because it would be kind of hard for us to exist. You know, we're not prophets. It would be hard for us to exist unless our brains constructed time the way that we perceive it. But I'm fascinated with the idea that in reality, there is really no such thing as linear time. It's just a construct of our minds and something that we've created ourselves. And that's just fascinated me. And so I like when Star Trek plays with time, especially in the way like they did in Cause and Effect. So temporal causality loops. That's next on my list. Char, back to you. What is on your list?
All right. This is probably the favorite thing that I have on my list. Many Starfleet personnel are caffeine addicts.
Awesome.
Yes. Picard has his Earl Grey tea. Janeway has her coffee black. O'Brien has Jamaican blend, double strong, double sweet. There's Ractigino. And I don't know. I take comfort in the fact that caffeine is still the accepted drug of choice in the future just because I'm such an addict myself.
It's not like alcohol where they replaced it with synthahol. There's no synthaene.
Synthaffine. Yeah, no.
Synthaffine.
No, caffeine is the socially accepted recreational drug. Woo! Yeah, woo!
This is why Argyle, if the gin business ever dries up, he'll set up a Starbucks in the Jeffries tubes.
Starbucks That's was right. on the D. It was always just around the corner that they never went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like one
in
on
the guest section where it's all fancy and they got the fancy carpet just that you can't see, but there's a little
there's one on area. Every deck. You just, you know, because you don't want to have to walk down to the next deck to get Starbucks. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's inconvenient. Yeah.
Okay, Daniel, what's next up on your list?
Okay, not to get too heavy here. One of my biggest things that I love about Star Trek is so when the first series came out in the 60s, in the late 60s, and even the Next Generation in the late 80s, the idea that humanity was able to get past its problems with itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the idea that we could come together, that there was an event or some sort of sequence of events that would allow us to come together and achieve wonders is fantastic to me. I really love it. I love that they even explained it. Hey, we had a World War III and it really sucked. And we got past the World War III and we decided, hey, we should not fight against each other, but we should move forward together. And I think that's a wonderful message that even today should be put forward, and everybody should try to do that. I think it it pushed past national boundaries and ethnic boundaries and religious boundaries. And it's like, hey, we're all one people. We are one people trying to achieve the same goal. And I actually think that's one of the strongest messages of Star Trek. I love it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's, mm-hmm. that's a great win. So, Landru, back to you.
Yes, back to me. I'm going to go back to the tech, and I like the consistent technology, not just the realistic technology that still inspires things, but, you know, the antimatter warp core and all these things that they talk, you know, offhand in the 60s, like the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual is super cool. I mean, they had people come in and figure out this is kind of realistic and this would kind of work, and then they try to keep it consistent. You know, transporters can't beam through shields unless you really need them to.
Unless the plot needs it to be possible.
Right. It's not like the Doctor's sonic screwdriver in Doctor Who. Insert noise. But, you know, it's got a stated, you know, the phaser is a stated list of things that it can do, and, you know, the holodeck can only do certain things, and it's something that they try to keep consistent across all the series, and I appreciate continuity in general, and I really think that they try to do really well at that.
Yeah, it makes the world seem real. I will say there is one thing the holodeck can do consistently, which is to malfunction at inopportune moments.
Oh, unless
you're on Deep Space Nine, and then they run Felix programs, and they all work fine.
They don't all work fine.
Yeah, they do.
Maniacal madmen try to take over the world. I mean,
you know, that was just a spy program. It was supposed to be like that.
That was fun.
All right. So, yeah. But, yeah, I agree with you on that one. That's a good one. I like the consistency. Okay. Lori, what's next up on your list?
I like the fact that women and men were considered equal in the series. I really like that because you didn't see that in a lot of TV or life in general, honestly. I really appreciated the fact that they did that. And I mean, Voyager's my favorite, obviously, because that's what I podcast about. But I mean, I really appreciated Janeway and what a role model that she was. So, yeah. To me, that I'm sure that meant a lot to people in the 60s. I mean, I was a kid. I don't know. I wasn't like around during that time, but I don't know. That just means a lot to me that nobody thought anything about the fact that you're a woman, you can be a captain. That's cool.
Yeah. I think gender equality would have been stronger even in TOS if Roddenberry had his way, but I was a little bit ahead of the curve there.
Yeah,
on television.
If they'd let him keep number one be a woman.
Yeah, that's true.
It would have really started back then.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. Maybe not so much with the production people involved, but the show itself.
Yeah, the
men
idea
and
behind
women
the show,
were just
sure.
the same. Yeah, the idea was great.
Yeah. Okay, Max, what's next on your list?
I've been going wildly all along my list, trying to find things that are appropriate for the moment. But I'm just going to go ahead and say, for being a popular entertainment that often, or at least more often than not, was about sociology and anthropology. I think that's really significantly cool, especially considering that it's generally not considered to be entertaining or interesting for most people.
Yeah, it does a lot for talking about ourselves and teaching us about ourselves in a great way. So that's huge. I mean, it's probably the reason that you can keep watching each of the series over and over again, because it's always saying something to us. I always think about the what Chris had talked about. You know, he hated Children of Time when he first saw it, and now he loves the show, the episode. But it's because the difference of where he is, because it's saying something to him now that it wasn't before. And I think that's, you know, Max, what you're talking about, the power of using sociology and anthropology as a basis gives it that concrete reality that it's not just science fiction. It's really about the human condition.
It also makes it part of the transformative concept that Star Trek was intended to be a functional object. Mm. I think that's significant. And it isn't brought up enough, especially these days, JJ.
You leave JJ out of this.
Yeah, seriously.
Don't be hating on JJ.
Yeah. Okay, so Tom, we're back to you. What's on your list?
One of the other things which hasn't talked about much is all the great writing that we see throughout all the different series and films. Not a lot of people actually say thank you and recognize all their work that they've done.
This is true. It's easy to criticize.
You know, after doing 700 some odd episodes and so many films, to the fact that honestly, it is still quality. And even the crap episodes, you know, whether it's a Threshold or Spock's Brain or something, it, you know, there's still something that you can get out of it. And that says a lot for the people who do, I think, write Star Trek, you know, whether it's, you know, DC Fontana, Ron Moore, or, you know, Robert Orci, all these people, they all have something in common and they all love Star Trek. And they're all trying to make something that says something to us. And whether you like it or not is a different story. But these guys work their asses off to give us something every time we go there. And yeah, you know, I'm thankful for somebody like a Brandon Braga or Rick Berman or, you know, for Roddenberry for starting it all and picking good writers who would stick with this and tell us good stories. And, you know, we can hate all we want. It's really not in the spirit of Star Trek. That's a great one, Tom.
I don't know why you singled out Spock's Brain, because Brain and Brain, what is Brain, is a fantastic line. That's amazing. So
it should win all of the awards.
Radio
so
controlled
many feels
Spock.
In that episode.
I mean, oh, wouldn't you like God. To have a life-size radio-controlled Spock?
Did they not redo that in Deep Space Nine? I'm just saying, right? The radio-controlled body, that was in Deep Space Nine as well, right? Just saying. Sorry.
Okay, that's a good win. Okay, Mariel, what's next up on your list?
All right. My favorite captain is Captain Archer. I think he's the best because, I mean, come on, he's captain of the first Warp 5 ship, going out where humans haven't been yet. I mean, that takes a pair, so he's my favorite.
Captain Archer. I like Captain
Plus,
Archer.
You really like him in those blue undies. So.
Actually, I think I'm going to go with the shower scene, if we're going there, Matt.
Woo, Captain Archer's shower scene. Okay, so that
yeah,
is...
that's. Can I add that to the list, too? Yeah,
that's just yeah, it's a subset of Archer, you know? So
that's a controversial pick, though. Like, Archer over all of the... I mean, I'm not going to argue or disagree with you. I like Captain Archer a lot. But that's a super controversial pick, I think.
I've heard some things. I don't change my mind. He's my favorite.
100 things people like. She likes Archer. No, I like Archer too. He's cool.
Archer's badass. He is. He really is.
All right, Matthew, what's next for you?
Well, again, I was going to say Jeffrey Combs, but then I realized, oh, wait, no, he doesn't. He's not the one who plays Sisko. It just seems like he did because he plays everyone.
Well, Jeffrey Combs is in all 100 of our picks.
He is everywhere.
Exactly. He's just, yeah. actually, it's Mariel said her favorite captain is Archer, and for me, it's Sisko. I loved Captain Sisko and the fact that. One, he was a wounded man when he comes on the show, and he's a father. He's somebody who's trying to find his place in life. It was really relevant for that time that it's on. It's even relevant now. And he was a man who was grappling with faith in a way that I thought was beautifully portrayed in that series. He was a man who was dealing with moral ambiguity in a way that no other captain did. And I really felt like, in a lot of ways, he was kind of the best of... They had taken Picard and Kirk and kind of pushed them together and made Sisko. He would punch Q in the face, and at the same time, he knew how to be diplomatic. He knew how to play the channels to get what he needed done in the same way that Picard might do. And so, and he was a really important character because he was also the first African-American captain that we saw, and showing the hope of the future. We see that with, seeing where we come from in the past, and where we are now and where we hope to be in the future. And it always reminds me of what Cassidy tells him. We don't have any limits anymore in the 24th century unless we place them on ourselves. And what a beautiful place to get to. And hopefully, Captain Sisko and that can really show us the way. And I love him as a captain. And I think part of it too is just personally, I was thankful to see that somebody portray that fatherhood is really important. There's a lot of personal issues that go there, but fatherhood always being there, very important. And so he's a great character in the end, and my favorite captain. So
yeah, I think he's possibly the most real person of all the characters, with maybe the exception, well, not the exception of, maybe in addition to Archer. He's kind of like the person you can identify the most with as a captain, as a real person who has the same kind of concerns that you have. And I mean, for me, he's actually the captain that I can relate to the most because I have children and I have, you know, the same types of things, many, many different things like he was dealing with. Okay, so for me, I'm going to jump down my list because I want to come to one that relates a little bit to what you said, Landru. You talked about consistent technology, and mine is universal interface design. And this is not nice. Just universal interface design on Starfleet ships, but I mean like through the whole galaxy, because with just a few exceptions, Starfleet officers are able to operate the control panels on alien ships and in alien facilities with basically no learning curve whatsoever.
Yeah.
<That's> true.
Truth.
So there's some constant running through the universe.
Yeah, there's the episode of Enterprise that we talked about where Trip gets pregnant, but that's not important right now. He was over there to work on their ship, which theoretically shouldn't be anything like the Warp 5 engine that he helped build. But he's just like, oh, just push this button over here and do this and you're fine.
That's what happens when you're a catfish loving savant, you know?
Apparently.
It's the power of the catfish.
It is. Pan-fried catfish. It does wonders.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Oli is from Florida. We breed them straight.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is.
Oh, yeah,
there it
is. Yeah.
There you go. Right. You brought it up.
Secrets
made
revealed.
It work.
Yep, he might talk slow, but that doesn't mean he's stupid.
It does.
That's right.
Hey. Got a lot of Southerners on here, boy.
Watch it.
Best mind your manners.
It's really too bad that Jeff Foxworthy never wrote an episode of Star Trek.
No,
it's really not. I think we're all okay that he didn't write any episodes.
Okay, Char, back to you.
All right, how about bromances?
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That's another one
Kirk
on my
and Spock, Miles and Jules, Tom and Harry. Some of these would possibly maybe go beyond friendship, depending on your interpretation. And what's not to love about that?
I have to say that you know, I listened to a lot of Trek of him before actually watching a lot of episodes. And I'm just like, oh, Miles and Julian, they certainly can't be as bromantic as it's made. They're just making fun of it. There's no way that it's possible. And like one of the last episodes that I watched, you know, Miles is like, I hate putting on, you know, my dress uniform. And Julian's like, I think it looks rather fetching on you. And I'm like, oh.
Wow.
They're not joking. Oh.
Miles and Jules.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I won't allow for this bashing of Miles and Julian. It's a beautiful
friendship.
It's
not bashing.
Nothing more.
Nobody has a problem if they occasionally got it on. I think it's fine.
It's totally cool.
Well, even TNG had its bromance. You know, Data and Geordi have a bit of a bromance going.
That's true. Yeah. Show enough.
I actually don't remember where I've heard this from, so please forgive me. But I have heard that Data and Geordi represent a young male friendship. And then Jules and Bashir represent a midlife kind of relationship between males. And then in Voyager, both Tom and Harry represent a different level of relationship. And they in all three series have a different level of male relationships where everybody kind of, you know what I mean? Like, but okay, that's fine.
So on Enterprise, you have Archer and Porthos, cool. Man's best friend.
Exactly.
Yes, that's also a different relationship.
That's totally different. Watch it.
Porthos loves cheese.
Okay, Daniel, what's your next pick?
Okay, I'm actually going to pick Spock. I think Spock represents a large portion of what Star Trek represents. The intermingling of both human and alien, the connection between us and the universe, the logical and rational points. Like, I think Spock as a character is a wonderful meshing between what we are and what we are to become. I think that we are infantile. Well, not to be offensive, but we're infantile now. Spock represents a maturity that we are to become. And I think that's that it's just a wonderful kind of aspiration. Spock does not succumb to his emotions, but he controls them. Spock does not, he doesn't give in to what he wants, but he allows it to happen. And I think Spock is, because you're in the 60s, and Spock is the only alien character on the show. Spock represents a kind of humanity that we have not achieved yet. And I love Spock. I don't care if he's portrayed by Leonard Nimoy. I don't care if he's portrayed by Zachary Quinto. I love the idea of Spock. I love this person who is driven by primal emotions and primal kind of rage or whatever, and then he's also driven by, hey, this logic and this scientific side. Like, I think that's where humanity is. I think Spock represents humanity as a whole, and I absolutely love it.
All true.
Good points.
Well said.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, we are back around to Landru already.
All right, it's going fast. I think I'm going to throw up alien babes.
You're going to throw up alien babes?
You're going to throw up?
You're going to throw,
no, throw out? Throw them up.
Yeah. Okay. Shoot. Gosh, nice. I throw out. Like a gourd or something.
Only the ones with tails.
This is all those alien babes that we loved, you know, so whether it's Solar or, you know.
Dax.
Dax, Seven of Nine, yeah. Any of these alien babes. Any of Kirk's women, you know?
Right. That's what I was aiming for when I was throwing it out. You know, just the costume designs that William Thies, I don't know how to say his last name. But the costume design from the original series and the use
and the hairstyles in TOS as well. Week.
Yeah. It's all unique and different. I mean, it may not have been unique in the 60s, but it's just really cool. I love alien babes. They don't have to be green. I don't have that problem.
All right, good pick. I knew someone was going to pick this.
Orion's, goodness.
Okay, Lori, what do you have up next?
Non-organic life forms. There you go. Like the EMH and Data. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Okay.
The crystalline entity.
Yeah, even that. Throw that
in. The Horta.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Horta.
Sure. There you go. Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of, I think that was a lot of social commentary too, with people that we don't quite consider equal to, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think they were really trying to be.
Okay, it shows a little bit that life is more than, because they can't really show, you know, pretty much everyone is humanoid, of course, because those are the actors that are around in Hollywood, but at least they made some effort to show some life forms that weren't just like us, right?
Yeah, I think it shows that life exists in several different forms, not just life as we see it.
Well, and what's really cool about it is it really helps show that life is sacred whether we understand it completely or not, you know. So these alien life forms, whether they're, you know, carbon-based or whether they're silicon-based or whether they're crystalline entities, like, they all are worthy of existing, you know. And that's really great about Star Trek, to show that life itself is something that should be valued. And that's a really beautiful thing to see, that in the future our goal is to understand life, even life that we don't understand right now.
Definitely. Okay, Max, you're next up on deck.
I'm really glad that the conversation just took that weird turn, because I'm going to go with one of the things I find most pleasant about Star Trek is for questioning the easy answers and usually avoiding the easy solutions, because I think that a lot of the stories have a very obvious result. And while we could talk about, you know, Star Trek embracing the idea of life being sacred no matter what its form, I don't think that's easily translated to, like, present day existence. I mean, I don't think that the little salt crystal guys in season one of Next Gen were meant to represent, like, Asians. I think that they were meant to represent a fundamentally different form of existence, and then a way of, you know, awakening to different realities that we aren't quite ready to deal with yet. And with the exception of a few occasional episodes, like, let's say, Operation Annihilate, they were usually really good about respecting alien life and the existence of other things, and that's pretty amazing. And for the most part, it actually held up that ideal, and I think that's pretty damned significant for a science fiction series that has lasted that long.
Totally.
Yeah, very good point. Just don't look like fried eggs, and you're okay.
Because that was the problem like for these guys.
I thought they looked like little things of fake vomit.
That too.
That you get it from the magic store.
Mostly that, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. Tom, what do you have up next?
What I have up next is something that you don't see very often in different fan bases, is dedicated gatherings like conventions, etc. You don't see many other...
That's on my list.
...other shows or movies that have just dedicated gatherings just to meet fans or to discuss their love for Trek, etc.
And with so many of the actors from the show being there as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, you don't even see something like
Star Trek.
It's not like you don't even see something for a show that was really popular, even now, like The Brady Bunch or I Love Lucy.
Or Friends Con.
Yeah, there's no such thing.
Okay, could you imagine a Brady Bunch convention? Everyone dressed up like Marcia?
Fine.
Oh, God. Marcia.
Okay, that's a good one. Mariel, we're already back to you.
I've got another Enterprise one. There's a big surprise. From the very first episode, the very first interaction that Jonathan and Hoshi had, I'm like, there's chemistry. And nothing ever came of it until the Mirror Universe, which was highly dysfunctional, but I was still happy to see it.
So is your pick, chemistry romance between Archer and Hoshi or In a Mirror Darkly?
Both.
Okay. So Archer-Hoshi hookup. Okay. Potentially.
Well, I didn't get to see it in the regular universe, hookup. So I was happy to see it in the Mirror Universe, but I wanted to see it in the regular universe.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just going to put down on the list for you potential of an Archer-Hoshi hookup. All right.
Okay.
You were shipping that.
I was shipping it, yes, from the very first second I saw them together.
Fan fiction!
Okay.
That's it.
Matthew, does that lead you into any pick?
No, I'm not going to go there right now, Chris. I'm actually going to go somewhere that we kind of went before, but I really like the new JJ universe, and I enjoy seeing the reinterpretation of the show from a different point of view. I appreciate that, you know, even Gene Roddenberry himself looked forward to the idea of somebody doing Trek different, bigger, and better. I really enjoy the people playing the characters. I'm a huge fan of Carl Urban playing Bones. I really enjoy Kirk by Chris Pine. Quinto is fine for me. He's not my favorite of the cast, but I love that what it's doing for Star Trek, though, as well. I love that without JJ coming around, we probably would still be in the dark times of Star Trek, where it wasn't on the consciousness like it is. And so whether you like it or not, it's done wonders for making Trek popular again, and being part of the cultural mythos again. And so I'm very thankful that, you know, JJ got the opportunity to do this. And, you know, crossing my fingers that somebody good will be brought in for the third film to hopefully wrap up that trilogy. I really enjoy that universe, and I'm thankful for it, for what it's doing for Trek. And I just personally like it, you know. I mean, I'm one of those fans. I like it, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Scratch another one off my list.
I agree with you. Can I ask, do you think Quinto is the weakest?
Strangely, I do. I think he's, for me personally, he's the weakest, but that's not saying he's bad. I'm not saying he's bad. But I just really enjoy, Pine's interpretation of Kirk. I think he's spot on. He reminds me of a young William Shatner, and Bones is just, it's like DeForest Kelly has been cloned, and they just, you know, it's so perfect. I just like those two specifically the best, and a little disappointed that Bones doesn't get more to do these days. I'm hoping that they will make him a little bit more part of the storyline next time. So,
do a spinoff.
Yeah.
Like House MD. Bones MD.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Bones metaphors, you know, we just need more of those.
It's a game show. What is McCoy trying to say in this scene?
I agree with you, though, Matthew. It has done wonders for just public awareness of Star Trek again, which, you know, for those of us who do prefer the Prime timeline, as it's now called, at least, you know, showing the studio that there is interest in Star Trek again. And so I think we'll get back to that as well. So that's good. Okay, so back to me. I am going to pick Alien Languages, and specifically for this, I'm talking about Enterprise. Now, I think not many people know that I actually studied language in university. My degree is in Russian language, so I studied language and linguistics. And I like in Enterprise in particular that they actually show alien languages. They have like large stretches of dialogue on Enterprise that are in alien languages with no subtitles. And they actually show the, of course, it's accelerated for television, so it's not exactly realistic, but at least they do show Hoshi trying to work out alien languages, and they show the development of the universal translator technology. And it has a realism to it that is lacking in the later series, where everyone can just magically talk to each other because this universal translator technology has been perfected. And I think something like the universal translator will exist in our future for Earth languages, that we will be able to communicate with each other in that way. But alien languages would be so different that what we see in the later series is just... Obviously, you need it to tell a story on television, because it would be boring if the story stalled out for 6 episodes while they figured out how to talk to somebody. But I like that they have spent the time, linguists have spent the time to create alien languages, especially Mark O'Kran with Klingon. And that's part of Star Trek. And Star Trek actually gave birth to a legitimate language in Klingon that you can actually study and learn to speak, and it has logical rules like any natural language does. And at this point in time, there may actually be more Klingon speakers than Esperanto speakers.
Take that, language of love.
Okay, Char, back to you.
Okay, I kind of want to throw back to something we were talking about a little bit earlier this last round and bring up fan fiction. This one's from my co-host Tristan, because he despises the fact that when I bring up fan fiction, so it's all for you, bud. I think fan fiction is fantastic because while we were talking about fan-made films, there's just as much people who have been writing their own novellas, vignettes, whatever, sometimes full-length novels, just for the sake that they want to. It's a labor of love. They don't earn any money off of it. They just share it, put it out there for people to read, and all they really get back is feedback. That's it.
And they're perfectly really happy good. To do
it. It can be. I mean, there's a lot of crap out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad.
But at the same time, there are those diamonds in the rough, and you just think, wow, this person could really have a career as a writer. And Let's face it, there's so many opportunities in Star Trek, missing scenes, gaps in stories that you just really want to fill out. And that is what fan fiction is for, and it's fun.
Well, let's just give one example. Our friend Dayton Ward, who is one of the big names in Star Trek novels these days, one of the great writers in Star Trek, he was basically writing fan fiction, got into Strange New Worlds contest, got published, got in there several years in a row. And at that point, they brought him on and said, you know, you've sold X number of pieces now, so you can't really be an amateur anymore. So, hey, why don't you come write novels for us? So, yeah, fan fiction.
Yeah.
Can lead people into that as well.
Dreams do come true.
Daniel, how about you? What's next?
All right, next on my list is something that can kind of be applied mostly to TOS and TNG, but it could really apply to all of Star Trek. It's the captain's chair. It's this idea that the captain is responsible for everything that happens on the ship. Every crew member, every decision made, it all falls on the captain. So from TOS to TNG, all the way up through Voyager, you know, when Captain Janeway lets Harry Kim sit in the seat.
Only for the night shift.
It's the closest he'll ever get.
When you sit in the seat, it means business. It means things are about to get real. And I love it. I love the idea that this chair, this throne, this space, it's only designated for those who are ready for it.
Good pick. Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's see, Drew.
I'm going to go with cool uniforms.
Next gen.
Good call.
Mirror universe.
Oh. Cool First contact uniforms. Style.
Okay, well, cool uniforms then. Everyone, quick. What's your favorite uniform design? Landry, what's your favorite uniform?
I'm going to go with the later DS9 First Contact uniform.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, me too.
Same here.
All good things future.
For I'm me...
Gonna... Yeah. Chris, I think we're probably going to say the same thing.
For me, there's it's kind of a tie between those, which... of course, were made for First Contact, but I consider them the DS9 uniforms because that's where they got all the airtime, and the maroon jackets from the TOS films.
Oh yeah,
too hot.
Cool. Okay. I can't really.
Too hot.
Well, Daniel, you think those are hot? Look at the DS9 uniforms. What are they made out of? Like 6 layers of wool, plus they've got like all kinds of stuff on underneath.
So much wool.
I thought you meant too hot, like too sexy. And I agreed with that.
Yeah, that's it. Sexy.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you. My pick is that tie. I love the TOS movie uniforms. I just think they look so class. I mean, the uniform finally looked good. And then the First Contact style uniforms, for me, it's the captain's uniform. I don't like the fact that they made the rest of them jumpsuits again. if they all have the jacket, it makes it, it looks great. When you turn it into a jumpsuit, again, it just starts to look like PJs.
All right. Next up, Lori. Gosh, we're already back to Lori. What do you have up next?
I'm going to go with the holodeck. I don't know if we talked about that, but like from Tristan's favorite, and here you go, buddy, Fairhaven, to like... I like Barclay's fantasy about all the crew members that terrorized him. That was my favorite. That was cool. Mr. Broccoli.
I am the goddess of empathy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done a lot of fun things with the holodeck. Besides it being an easy plot device when they don't have ideas for other episodes, there have been a lot of very good episodes as well that were made possible by the holodeck.
Yeah, it's also a better way to use standing sets and existing costumes than finding planets that just happen to look like 1920s Chicago.
True.
Right. You know, they say now scientists have this theory that somewhere in the universe, we all exist exactly like we are. We're doing this show together, and there's only some tiny little differences because there's a finite number of possible ways that particles can come together. So if you go far enough, eventually everything has to duplicate itself. The thing about that, though, in Star Trek is that there are a surprising number of planets that look like the Paramount backlight. Something about that combination of particles, it just recurs more often than math would tell you would be possible.
Right.
Did you ever see the Paramount backlot being built? Maybe it's a naturally occurring formation that nature just finds a way.
Is that nature how Vasquez Rocks got into so many places?
Also Vasquez Rocks.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, without the holodeck, we wouldn't have, you know, Vic Fontaine, so I'm a huge
fan
of the holodeck.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay, Max, back to you.
Okay, everyone's got fun ones, but I'm out of fun ones, so I'm going to go with my favorite thing about Star Trek throughout most of its history is that where other series would take a sensational or atmospheric or fun or exciting storyline, they would be boring when it was appropriate, and that is incredibly important. And I think that it shows a maturity on Star Trek's part that most other
just things lack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Daring to be boring.
Yeah. Daring to be boring.
It shows a seriousness toward that subject.
It shows a confidence that they know that they have the space for it. There's enough room in their universe for people to argue about, you know, a bureaucratic or minor issue about their lifestyles. That makes sense. It's logical, it's reasonable, and I think it's important that there is just a space to deal with those aspects of reality. And I think that if we excised them from Star Trek and you know, as a sacrifice to get more viewers, we'd be losing something fundamental about why we like it. So there's that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, back to you.
One thing I've always liked about Star Trek in general is all the music that gets created to fit all the different scenes, or to bring out the emotion in every single different scenario.
Definitely, and the fact that, I mean, if you think about the sheer amount of music that's been composed for Star Trek over the years, that's a monumental feat.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Mariel, what's next for you?
7 of 9. I think she's probably my favorite character out of all of them. Her coming of age story, I kind of relate to it a little bit. Just the whole idea of not really knowing how to interact with normal people. and kind of thinking, like, why do you want me to do this? That's illogical, you know. It just doesn't make sense. I'm sorry?
You were assimilated.
Yeah.
Were you assimilated and now you're coming back to humanity?
Oh God, I don't even know. Like, I just, yeah.
Trauma? Okay, that's cool. We don't have to talk about it.
It's just people do things that I find weird, and I'm like, why are you doing that? And they're looking at me like I'm the crazy one. So it's just that aspect of things. So I really like her.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Matthew, what's next for you?
Oh, goodness. I'm going to say, you know, we talked about this a little bit with what Char picked, but I'm going to go with the Star Trek EU. I love the books in the comics. I love the book series, especially for, you know, taking and giving us an eighth season of Deep Space Nine. That was fantastic. I love them for finally giving me Beverly and Picard being a couple and being married. I love all of these things that the books have been able to do, really take the universe and just make it bigger and more complex and just tell me stories that I just don't get to see. And especially now, because it's the only place to find the Prime Universe. And so it's so exciting to, you know, pick up Kristen Byer's newest Voyager book and see what's going on with that crew, or, you know, to pick up the latest book in one of the new series with Titan and see what's happening with, you know, Riker and Troy and their crew and all these things. You know, Ezri Dax is a captain now. Can it get any better? It can't. So it's so much fun, and it keeps, again, that Prime Universe alive for all of us who really love that and want to see more of them. So thank you to the authors, too, because those people are freaking fantastic.
Matthew wants to be under Ezri's command.
She can tell me to do whatever she wants. So
pervert that line.
Oh, shut it.
I'm going to go with a serious one, and that is internal consistency, because, of course, there are inconsistencies in Star Trek, naturally, but I think that why I like Star Trek more compared to other franchises is that it feels like a real world that could exist and that you could live in, and it's because they do make an effort, a very strong effort, to be consistent, to make sure that the rules of the universe are uniform, that the events on the timeline more or less flow into each other, and it feels like it's a real history and a real world of the future. And I think that after writing more than 700 hours of stories in this universe, the fact that it is as consistent as it is a pretty amazing feat. And that's one thing that I love about Star Trek.
Yeah, I love me some continuity.
Okay, Char, back to you.
Okay, one thing I love about Star Trek is how your perception of it or how you regard it changes as you age. Because I started off as a very young Trekker at 6 years old, thinking, oh, cool, these people live out in space and they visit aliens. And especially with the movies, I notice a big difference between how when I first saw them at, say, maybe 10 years old or so, and then as I grew up, to now I see them, obviously, in a very different light. I'm able to catch on to much more mature themes, where when I was younger, it was all about seeing these interesting characters interact with one another, and then, of course, some space battles. It was cool. And it was in space. And I loved the fact that there was a better future out there, as we've mentioned already. Even at that age, I was totally into that. But then now, with bigger themes, like, say, in Wrath of Khan, with Kirk kind of not really knowing how to regard his birthday, he's feeling old, he's not sure where he's going with the rest of his life, what is he doing, what is the next step for him? You know what? As we all age, we face that crossroads. Who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? And what happens to me next? Things like that. As you get older, you can appreciate those things that they put in there the whole time way more. So I definitely appreciate that about Star Trek.
Definitely true. That's what I notice now when I watch. I see something different in not every episode, but a majority of episodes than I did the first time I watched them as I moved through life. So good choice there. Daniel, what's your next pick?
My next choice is the captains as a generalization, as a group. I think that each of the captains are kind of indicative of their era. Like Kirk was a frontiersman. He went and just did what he wanted. And even in the Abrams verse, he's someone who's bold and daring and ready for the future. And then we move to Picard, who represents the 80s in the early 90s. He's a diplomat. He wants everybody to get along. It doesn't really matter if we're talking about Kirk or Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Archer, or even Newkirk. Like, I just think that all of the captains represent the time that they were created in and that they exist in, and also try to move us forward. I love all the captains, and I think it's just wonderful how they represent Star Trek.
Good choice. Yeah, I agree about the times that they're created as well. Okay, next up is Landru again.
Humor. I'm gonna go with humor, like where Max talked about how it dared to be boring. I appreciate that it dares to be funny sometimes, and that they could take themselves seriously, but also know that sometimes we need a break from the you know, drama, and to just give us a flat out goofy episode that still may try to tell us something, but for the most part is just the actors and the crew having fun. And I like watching other people have fun, and it helps me to have fun too. So I like that.
Totally.
What is your favorite goofy episode?
See, that's the issue, is that which ones are intentionally funny?
That's a good distinction to make.
How about Rascals?
Yeah. I mean, Trouble with Tribbles. Trouble with Tribbles, I'd have to say, is the most obvious, supposedly, you know, obviously humorous episode that's also still funny.
It's also just good.
And good, yeah.
Trouble with Tribbles. Even if you disregard the humor, it's actually got a good story.
How does everyone on the panel feel about the Trouble with Tribbles versus Trials and Tribulations?
Both fantastic.
They're both fun.
Yeah.
They're both
very
humorous. They're both great. They're both and I think humorous. Trials and Tribulations enhances Trouble with Tribbles when you go back and watch it. Yeah.
I agree. I only ask because I believe that Trials and Tribulations only adds to the fun. I love it. I think it's great.
Well, I think for the timeline to be sustained, they have to not add anything. That seems fundamental.
Right.
Okay. Just so that we get that clear.
It enhances it for the viewer when you watch the episode. You know, you can picture Dax as throwing tribbles on Kirk's head, but you can't see her. So.
Right, and I think it's totally believable that Kirk and Spock would walk right past Dax and Sisko. Like, you know, they walk past so many people. They don't care.
Right.
Yeah, people get assigned and reassigned all the time.
All the time. Okay. Lori, what else do you have?
I'm just going to keep being serious and just say I really like the way most of the story showed the characters as being not self-serving. I mean, there's some exceptions to that, but most of the time they were out to help others and to do what was good for the entire group and not just to benefit one person or maybe just a group of people.
Yeah.
Good.
That's a good
Something
one.
Good to Need teach to... As children come into Star Trek and watch that.
From a writing perspective, I've always been amazed by their ability to actually come up with storylines that involve the characters doing things for other people. It's got to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So easy to say, like, I want more money and then have a story about it, but constantly doing the right thing, that's pretty tough. Just the idea that they've managed to do so many episodes about these kinds of people, very impressive.
And even Quark is selfless from time to time.
Yeah, on every occasion.
It's true.
Yeah.
Once in a paper blue moon.
Okay. Matt. That's right. Okay, Max, what else do you have?
I've got the Prime Directive. Not just for what it actually is, but for how complicated it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love how many arguments it has spawned.
That will never die. Real.
No.
Pretty great. Even though it's pretty much treated like a flimsy little plot device in the new movie, it's still an interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting construct for the basis of Star Trek, and it allows the writers to talk about, I think, the quandaries that we would actually face in real life, because, you know, you have this vision of what's the right thing to do all the time, but in reality, the situation dictates your actions. And so the captains are put in those situations where they have to decide what's right and what's wrong. And hopefully, at least for me as a viewer, I don't want the captains to adhere strictly to the Prime Directive all the time, because, I mean, you would question their intelligence as a leader if they did that all the time. So it can make for very interesting storytelling. Definitely. Tom, what else do you have?
One thing that me and a few of my decade co-hosts thought was the different ways that fans are coming into actual learning about Star Trek, etc. And one of the stories which I came across last week was a player in Star Trek Online who only plays the actual game due to the fact that it's a space combat game that never saw Star Trek before, and now he's going to go through and watch the different series and the movies, and he's becoming a fan of the actual show just because of a different way of becoming a fan.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I never thought about that, but yeah, I guess
that is.
Yeah, because that game is, there is so much starship combat, but there's a lot of other stuff in that game too. I mean, you have diplomatic missions as well, right? So,
and we have the ability to create our own missions and share it with the community. Mm-hmm. So we're effectively making our own episodes, so to speak, mm-hmm. in our foundry.
That's really neat.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Mariel, what's next on your list?
The Mirror Universe. Just that no holds barred, the excuse to kind of let the characters show their bad side.
Get a little crazy.
Yeah.
And kill each other.
I think everyone loves the Mirror Universe
uniforms.
Yeah, so. I was waiting for Matt to bring that up.
Just saying.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and let's just add Empress Hoshi to the list right now. So since we're
talking about
let's get that on there right now.
It's a good call.
Are we all happy or not that all of the series didn't enter the Mirror Universe? I mean, did you guys want to see a Mirror Universe of all of the series?
I don't know. Mirror Data might be interesting. It'd be like a Terminator.
I feel like Mirror Data would rule the alternate universe with an iron fist.
I think he'd have to. Unless
either that, or
I disabled
he would be
him.
Like he would be an android that crashes all the time, and he has had trouble doing basic calculations.
Danger!
Yes.
Danger, Mr. Picard. Danger.
And his arms are going like this.
he's like Satan's robot.
Danger, Jean-Luc Picard.
That would be fantastic.
Wait, do you? I know. I think that really it comes down to you trust any of the other writers of the end of their series to do the Mirror Universe justice. I mean,
they do
it really well on Deep Space Nine, but I don't know if they really get it.
Well, I don't know. I think everyone could have done it, and I'm not a big fan of the Enterprise. I don't like In a Mirror Darkly all that much. I mean, it's fun. Just a fanboy for two episodes, but as a story, I remember when it first aired, I got to the end of it and I'm like, okay, so what? But I just rewatched it yesterday as I'm getting through to the end of my Enterprise rewatch, and what I do think about it is that if Enterprise had continued for three seasons and they had gone back to this universe, those two episodes, they do set up an interesting storyline that they could have pursued. So I think everyone could have done it. And, you know, I don't know what the TNG Mirror Universe would have been like, but yeah, it could have worked fine. I mean, you know, Voyager Mirror Universe could have been a case where, you know, Chakotay could go and talk to Janeway and she would actually listen to stuff that he had to say, and Neelix would have been a great chef.
No. She would have killed him.
Harry Kim
would have been an admiral.
Yeah.
Well, they did actually, the writers did actually try to do that. What was it? Living Witness?
Living Witness.
That was supposed to be like their version of Mirror Universe.
It's kind of like an alternate, yeah.
And I couldn't visualize next-gen Mirror Universe, but now I'm picturing Data as a cardboard box robot. It just makes perfect sense.
Awesome. Like Awesome-O.
Yeah. Yes!
Yeah.
Adam Sandler.
But with Brent Spiner in the suit.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
He would be Lore. Mirror Data is Lore.
That's just thinking.
Does Mirror Riker have two beards?
he just has hair all
he
over
He has
his
a
face.
Shaved goatee.
Yes.
He's got a like just big sideburns like Wolverine.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
pretty sure that I like Mirror that. Riker would have an eye patch also.
I imagine he looks kind of like he did in Genesis.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
So in the Mirror Universe, Riker. Does Geordi give Riker tips on how to pick up women?
Heck yeah!
We can only hope. He's a big pimp, man. He pimping.
Okay.
He's got his call Matthew. Girls in engineering.
Well, I don't know. There's no holodecks in the Mirror Universe, so I don't know who he would be in love with.
Well, hold on. Don't say in love. It's the Mirror Universe. He's a rapist.
That is correct. And Argyle is actually running engineering in the meantime.
Okay, now this is fan fiction I'm going to write.
Yay!
Everyone get on that after
just
the
make
show.
Sure, just make sure that you put in a barrel roll, because I want to see Argyle trying to do that.
It would be a very slow barrel roll.
Oh, man. Argyle doing barrel rolls?
It probably
that would
was.
Be awesome.
With his bottle of gin in hand.
It would probably take him 5 minutes.
What do you think? Argyle will spill all his gin whilst doing it?
Yes.
Oh, no, that's the thing about Argyle is he can barrel roll and not spill his gin at all. It's amazing.
Slow but steady?
That's why it takes 5 minutes.
I hope that the blast door on the ISS 1701D comes down really slowly.
But it's got spikes on it.
Perfect.
It's like a
Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
like,
exactly like in Temple of Doom.
Oh my god. Yes.
And like a big boulder comes out of the warp core.
Of course, yes.
Hold on. Stop throwing out ideas. I don't have my notepad.
Get on it.
And
that's
of course,
okay.
Argyle wears
a good
hat
point.
All the time,
forgot,
engineering, so he can grab the hat right before the spikes take off his wrist.
Oh
no, he loses it.
Max.
He loses the hand.
Oh, perfect.
And he gets a claw hand.
Like Dr. Claw and Inspector Gadget.
He gets a Gorn hand or something, but it's evil. No, it's good. But it's the Mirror Universe. It's Mirror Gorn.
But it's the Mirror Universe.
So it's benevolent and kind, and like it's like the Gorn Santa Claus.
Gorny Claus.
Gorny Claus.
Max, if you don't write this, so help
All right,
me.
Fine. I'll write it.
All right.
Okay, you better. I'm holding you
fine.
To it. This is too good to pass
okay.
up.
Okay. Do I have a due date? Right. You're like the boss. You can give me a due date.
That's right. I'm the managing editor. I give you 3 months for a full manuscript.
How many pages is a full manuscript? I need details on this.
A full manuscript is however long it takes.
Okay. How much sex should there be?
At least five scenes. Whether it varies between people, that's for you to decide.
Okay, cool. Okay? Job done.
Hello and welcome to After Darkness with Trek FM.
With your sexy new host.
Okay, I love Charlene
Schmidt and Max Hayden.
I love this idea.
I'm a small girl.
Exactly. Not only will that be a new piece of fanfic, it'll be our next show.
On sex.fm.
Okay, well, let's move on a couple more here. Matthew, what do you have?
Okay, wow, goodness. How do I follow that up? Crap. I'm gonna go with something that, you know, we talked a little bit about earlier, but this has been, you know, for anyone who knows, listens to any of the shows I'm on, I love starships like Drew does, and I have a ton of them around my house. But for me, there's been one starship that always just captured my heart, and it was the Enterprise refit from all the movies. So whether it was the Enterprise refit or it's really the Enterprise A from Undiscovered Country. They finally got that ship looking right. The bridge looked right. The engineering room, everything looked great in that ship. And it's such an elegant design. It looks like an enlightened species designed it, and not just because we wanted to, you know, explore space, but because we wanted to show off what we could do as a race, and that it was made to look beautiful as much as it was to explore. And I love the fact that it seemed like Starfleet at that point was showing off design wise, kind of like admirals do with their belt buckles. And so, but I just, it's a great ship, and it exudes power and beauty all at the same time. And, I just enjoy the design, the lines, everything are fantastic from a design perspective. And, it for me was the Enterprise that's the one that I want to fly around in. When I imagine myself, you know, as we all have, being in the captain's chair, it's always Kirk's chair from Star Trek VI, you know. And being on that Enterprise, and hey, they've got a real galley. They make, you know, real turkeys, and I mean, so, you know, this isn't replicated crap. This is real stuff, you know. So
I'm really surprised after listening to the last orb that you didn't say the Defiant.
I like the Defiant. It's a great little ship.
The Enterprise. Oh, we all made the same joke.
Yeah,
<I
know.
laughs> There it
nice.
Is.
I'm glad everybody got that. It's like when I'm in a Star Trek podcast.
The one problem I have with the A, everybody loves the A. Everybody loves the A.
Yes.
I hate the warp nacelles on the A. I absolutely
Boo.
Hate them.
Get off the show, Daniel.
I'm sorry.
So wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're out of here.
I'm sorry.
Wait. Why do you hate them?
Okay. Because they're boring and plain. There's no Bessard collector. There's no, like, cool lights
Whoa. There's a Bessard collector.
Okay,
it's on
but
the front.
I'm saying,
oh,
there's,
God,
there's,
guys,
there's,
come on.
There's lights on the lights on the inside when it goes
we'll
to
We'll never
warp.
Have sex
no.
again.
But this is the point.
Okay, guys.
It's just a more elegant design for a more elegant age.
Okay, I'm okay with that. What? But one of the most striking elements of the original series ship design is the red spinning lights. It's cool. You're like, whoa, it's rotating and cool. Like, you're okay. and then the Enterprise D comes along before the Enterprise. Like, I don't know. I love that it's like a bright red and very like a deep red. And then they have the blue lights along. I love that contrast, the blue and the red. That they have along the nacelles,
okay.
Which the A does not
but,
have at
but
all.
The
refit,
yeah, but the original series doesn't have that. It only has the red.
No, so, it only I mean, has red. But the A doesn't have either. It doesn't
it's
have
got blue. It's got blue on the inside of the nacelles. I'm
it
just saying, it's there.
Okay, look, I think kinda. What this all boils down to, what we've just discovered here, is that Daniel has a warp nacelle fetish. And
oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Hey, and that would explain, and this is a very controversial statement.
I don't know what it'll explain.
I love the J.J. Abrams Enterprise.
God,
and
know,
it's because
know.
Of those Those ample warp nacelles. I love them. I think those warp nacelles
are terrible. Wow. I think, Dan, you need to write a feature.
Kinky.
You need to write a thorough examination of all the warp nacelles from the original 1701 through the JJ.
Don't forget the pilot.
No, no, no. You need to do it from the original 1701, but you know, you'd want to start with the NX-01 since that's the first Enterprise.
Yes. Of course.
Which has decent, they're very circular. You know, okay, I'm sorry. I'll get into it in the feature. This is getting really dirty.
I really like the little...
I know.
I can be the nacelle guy. That's fine. I'm okay. I'm like Scotty. It's totally okay. I'd like to get my hands on her ample nacelles, if you know what I'm saying.
Whoa, don't talk about Char like that. Jeez, come on.
He's not talking about me.
Sorry. We know what you're saying, because did everyone notice that as Daniel was talking about the nacelles there, he did the double checkoff.
He did.
From
iMac. Wow.
So you are real women? Yes.
Well, I mean, if we go really, really, I don't want to be too inappropriate right now, but if we go back to some of the original, episodes of TOS, we have those little pokies, right? The little pokies with the. Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.
Chris, did you get a screenshot?
Okay,
guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope so.
Here's where we are. Okay, here's one more from my list, real quick. I'm gonna go with diplomacy. Just because I like the fact that Star Trek is a show, even in the 2000s, an Enterprise where, you know, at a time where in science fiction, it would be very easy to have space battles. It would be very easy to have, as much as I like Battlestar Galactica, it'd be very easy to have this constant conflict going on. It's a show that says things can still be solved through diplomacy. And sometimes they can't. But you should try, and very often you can succeed that way. And I think that's a good message for our time. Okay, we have passed 2 hours, and we have covered 58 items. So we're going to close this out with one lightning round. We're just going to go through everyone. Just throw out one more item from your list. We're not going to discuss them. Quick lightning round. And then the remainder of the items we're going to put on the show page so listeners can go and find out our entire selection of 100. Mm. So, Char, one item.
Okay. Star Trek gave life to several actors' careers.
Excellent. Daniel.
I love Romulans.
And they're ample nacelles.
Holodoc.
Holodoc. Good. Lori.
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Oh, nice one.
Good. That's a great one. Max.
I love that it's a unifying mythology that has no religious connotations, so it's a mythology for atheists. And my co-host Mike wants me to say lens flares, but that's stupid.
All right. Tom.
A fan base that will live on forever.
Very true. Mariel.
Oh, fight scenes with futuristic weapons.
Like Andorians.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Yes.
Ooh, good one.
Matthew.
I'm going to go with the Wrath of Khan. Without the Wrath of Khan, there would be no Star Trek anymore. So, really thankful for that film.
Word.
Great. And I was going to close it out with Andorian fight scenes, but since you guys already did that, I'm going to throw out Shatner's acting. Because...
Yes!
Excellent. Yes.
What would Star Trek be without that? What would our culture be without Shatner?
I gotta empty.
He does so many things.
Pointless.
Yeah. Desolate.
I'd have killed myself by
sad,
now.
Depressing.
I mean, no TJ Hooker, no Boston Legal, no Priceline commercials.
How would we know how self-parody works?
We would not.
He's a beautiful man. He is a beautiful man.
Yeah, absolutely is.
Okay. Great.
This has been...
You
would know, Daniel, wouldn't you?
All right, we all learned a lot about each other. We grew. We grew closer together.
We've come together now.
It got a little awkward in one point, but
we saw it through. And now we're forever bonded.
We did. It's been a lot of fun. And as I predicted, we wouldn't get to all 100 in the show itself. So we will put those on the show page. Thank you guys all for taking over 2 hours of your night. And Tom, over there in Wales,
it's now 4:20 in the morning.
Goodness my gracious. Goodness.
You trooper.
Thank you for staying up for us, Tom. And so everyone, let's tell the listeners where to find each of you. Tell what show you're on the network, where to find you online if they want to. We'll go down the order we've been using here. So Char, please go first.
All right. You can find me with Lori and Tristan on To the Journey.
To the journey.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it took a moment. Come on, guys. Hop to. Chop, chop. And you can find me on Twitter at Oh the Profanity.
Great. Daniel.
I am on any social network you want at DPROULX19. Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, anything you want.
Great. And sometimes people will be hearing you on the Ready Room. And Matt Miller is gone. Everyone go check out. Trek out. Yes, go trek it out.
That's right, trek out.
Good slip.
Perfect. Matt Miller is gone, so everyone go check out trekzone.org. That is Matt's website. And listen to The Orb, which Matt is editing for us as well. And
to the orb.
To the orb.
That's not
is
how that works.
To the orb, I guess.
Is that a thing? I want to say that every time.
It's a secret word.
Okay, Landry.
Sorry. You can find me on Twitter at 005, all spelled out. And they can find me on Trek FM occasionally.
That's right. Every TOS episode of The Ready Room. You can catch Landrew. Lori, are we doing this again?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. You can find me with Char on To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Ooh, that was emotional. You were emoting. That was great. And you can find me on Twitter at LoriS68.
Great. Max.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm on Trek FM with Commentary Trekstars with my co-host Mike, and we also do Commentary Trekstars and on CommentaryTrekstars.com. We're on Twitter and other things. We're Commentary Trekstars or Com Trekstars all over the internet, and I can't remember all the things we're on.
You're like Kirk, and you're trying to make a computer explode with the commentary track stars, commentary track stars, commentary track stars.
It was a joke that went way too far, like everything we've ever done together.
Okay, Tom.
You can find me on Decade with my co-hosts Colin, Shervin, and Kate. And there's one thing we always like to say on Decade is to the Foundry.
Yes, to the Foundry.
To the Foundry.
Let's go to the Foundry, you guys.
To the Foundry.
It's a fun place. And you can also find me on the Twitterverse, which I am TomBad2378.
Great. And Mariel.
You can find me writing the news for Trek FM and also on Twitter at AFloridaGirl, all separated by underscores.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a long show, but a lot of fun. And I appreciate you helping us celebrate the 100th Ready Room.
Yay!
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Always fun.
Chris, I have to say, that was just a fan-stinking-tastic show. I mean, what an amazing crew that we have here at Trek FM. And, you know, I'm sorry for all the people who couldn't be on. There were so many of our crew that just would have loved to be here, just didn't work out. But thank you to everyone who is here, because I think that'll probably be the longest Ready Room that we've ever done. In fact, Picard would be so proud of us for having the longest staff meeting ever.
That's a good point. Yeah, if this doesn't turn out, even with the abbreviated news segment, if this doesn't turn out to be the longest ready room, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, we may have done something wrong at that point.
But it was fun. I mean, we managed to get in at least 68 of the 100 items. It actually, if you count all the other ones that were kind of tossed in that we didn't actually line item, I'm sure we're at least in the 70s somewhere, if not up to 80. So it was fun just to throw out all of these random things for once, because usually we, you know, pick a topic and we build off of an episode. So great fun. And again, I really appreciate everyone from the crew who took the time out to join us today.
Well, it just really shows how much Star Trek has to talk about, and all of these different items, from super silly things to, you know, liking a certain character, or you know, I think Ezri's hot, you know, to all the way to the really important social issues that we talked about that Star Trek, you know, created in the 60s. All of those things together in that broad spectrum is what can be talked about something like Star Trek. And I loved what Max brought up about the anthropology and sociology of Star Trek and really what that brings out. And what a great testament to what Gene created and what, you know, Rick Berman really brought under his wing and fostered there, and then has now been brought through all the way to JJ, and who knows what the future brings. And as Spock said, there are always possibilities.
Absolutely. I'm just disappointed that we weren't all in the same place so that after the show we could all play Fizbin together.
Yes, and share a bottle of Romulan ale.
It would have been wonderful. Okay, well, let's let everyone go because we have kept everyone way too long today. If you would like to share your thoughts on the show, anything that we talked about, and there's a lot of it today, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send to a show. Choose the ready room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website now. This is a new feature. Look on any page on the site, and off to the right side of the page, you will see a little tab that says Send Voicemail. If you click that, a box will pop up. It will allow you to record a voicemail with your camera mic, and you just put in your name, your email address, and it will upload it to us as an MP3 file. So we'd love to hear from you by voice. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm. Oh, and on the website in the forums at trek.fm/forums, you'll find a place where you can talk with us and other fans. And of course, you'll find us on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people would like to find you online?
Well, if you'd like to find me, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02, and I'd love to talk to you there. Give me a follow, an at reply, and we'll talk about all sorts of different things. Obviously, Star Trek, but of course, do lots of other things. I'm very excited this week is Man of Steel. I'm going to see Mumford & Sons. So if you like music, movies, books, comics, you know, all these different types of religion, all these things I'd love to talk to you about. And then, of course, Chris, we do The Orb. Together every week, doing and talking about all things Deep Space Nine. Such a fun show to be able to do, talking about our favorite Star Trek series. And then talking literary universe with Literary Treks, books and comics, one of the things that I was grateful for in Star Trek on our list. And we have a great time doing that. In fact, we had a blast last week talking about the Captain's comic. So if you enjoy Star Trek, you want more Prime Universe, and you're sad because it's not around, join us for those conversations, because there the Prime Universe lives. Now, Chris, if we want to find you somewhere in all of this online, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And finally, I got my personal website overhaul finished. So that's up now as well. And that's easy. It's cbrianjones.com if you want to go and read my writing on general science fiction, on technology, music, see photos, whatever you want to see. That site is now up as well, cbrianjones.com. And that's where you'll find me. Also, Matthew, you mentioned the two shows that you and I do together, The Orb and Literary Treks. I also want to invite everyone to check out all the other shows on the network. We had someone there, if you count Colin by voicemail, we had someone representing every show on the network today. You can go to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory, trek.fm/pd, short link, and you'll find links to all the shows and the different ways to access them. There's Trek News and Views, there's To the Journey, there is Matterstream, my interview show. There's a Hyperchannel, which we haven't done in a while, but there are lots of episodes of that there as well, our video news show. There's Decade for you gamers out there, Captain's Log, audio versions of our features, and there's Commentary Trek Stars as well with Mike and Max. So go check out all of our shows. And also, if you love our shows, please drop by iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you, and it helps other listeners find the shows as they search for them in the iTunes store. And lastly today, we would like to invite you to support our sponsors for the Ready Room 100. First, there's Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or even an online store. It's the best platform for hosting and the best CMS that you'll find. I guarantee I've been using it myself for about 6 years now. You'll love it. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your purchase on new accounts. Just go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6 to save 10%. And also, there's TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a fan club, it's a challenge. You'll explore new places, you'll learn new things, and you'll collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. And along the way, you'll win great prizes. It's a really interesting concept. We're hearing good things about it from some of our listeners who have already been over to the website, visited, and solved the first challenge. So give it a try yourself. Go over to trekfan.org and don't miss out on this very unique opportunity for Star Trek fans. Well, Matthew, I'm kind of tired after this ready room, so I'm going to wander off, and actually, I'm going to go see if I can find Alice Eve and ask her why she didn't show up in our list of 100 things we love about Star Trek today.
That's a great idea, Chris. I can't believe she didn't turn up on our list, and I hope you find her, because it'll probably be a great time. But it's time to stick some ample nacelles in it, because the ready room is done.